Good morning and welcome to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard and rain, go away.
Hey, we might be good till noon.
Maybe till noon, but what do you think? We're in this wet pattern. Go away, rain. Go away.
It was supposed to be April showers bring May flowers. Seems like I don't even know what to say, but it's May rain.
I don't know.
We've had
quite a bit of rain, and it seems like we're in this wet pattern. We've been in this wet pattern for some time, and if I'm not mistaken, so far for the year, are we up like eight or nine inches?
That's a bunch. It's a bunch. It's way more than it should be. But it's been a good spring. I mean, it's really hard to argue because every tree went exactly in the cycle it was supposed to, and the color was magnificent. I mean, the dogwoods, this is the best year for dogwoods I have ever seen personally.
Across the board, I agree.
I mean, every single one of them is gorgeous, and this is why you want to buy a dogwood. And then, unfortunately, we have other springs, you know, where they get nailed and they're just not as pretty. But I am a little concerned on the dogwoods, maybe about it being this wet, just because it's wet.
You know, stuff like this, when you see it as such, you know, like you said, the dogwoods, some of the Floridian varieties that this is where those diseases kind of get into some of our plants, you know, our trees and our shrubs because of the dampness and because of, you know, it being a little cool. Mm-hmm. And so those things happen when they're in bloom.
Yeah, and, you know, the pear trees, we have a fire blight that we tend to get. I'm anxious to see, are the wild pears going to be susceptible to this out on the highways? Are we going to see a lot of brown on those tips? I don't even know the answer to that. We're going to find out.
Time will tell. You know, but something else that I'm reminded of with some of this wetness that we've been experiencing is I want to go back to, was it 2011? We had a lot of rain early spring, and it kind of continued into the early part of summer. And what ultimately ended up happening was some of the pre-emergent products that we put down in the lawns and in our landscape beds, it kind of shortened the lifespan of those products. We had to reapply.
And I'm worried that we're going to kind of be in the same boat again, and people are going to be like, I put the pre-emergent down, it just didn't work. Well, if it keeps raining like this, you're going to get it. It's going to get used up a lot faster.
That could be. That's just what it reminds me of. And I think it was back in 2011, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, just like I said, rain, go away. Come back another day. We just need to continue that course of sunshine that we were seeing there off and on. It seems like it rains every couple of days.
You know, it's Derby Day. It's Derby weekend.
That's right.
It's going to be the muddiest, not the muddiest, but it's going to be another mud track that they got to run in, it looks like.
I know last year it was muddy.
Oh, it was awful.
Was it the year before? Is this the third year or the second year?
I think it's the third year. It just seems like every Saturday of Derby Day, here comes the mud on the track, you know, and it looks like the rain's coming from the southwest, which is the Louisville area. And, you know, they're going to get more rain. I think the race is supposed to go off sometime in the late 6 o'clock hour. I'm not sure, 6:45, 6:50, something like that, I think. Please don't hold me to that. But, you know,
we will. We'll hold you to that.
But they're going to get rain, and we've got rain coming in this afternoon. And, you know, our percentages as the day goes later into the afternoon gets higher. And then tomorrow looks like it's going to be an incredible day. So,
do you have a long shot? Do you have a horse in this race?
I do not. You know, when it comes to betting horses, if I'm betting $20, I might as well just give you the $20 because I'm going to get it.
Well, will you bet $20 and just go ahead and give me 20?
I might as well just give it to you.
I'll take it.
Do you have a favorite?
You know, I'm just looking at some things here. A couple of my buddies, they're trackies.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. They like to go to the track.
Will they go down there or will they just go?
No, they'll go to a local track.
Local track.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, which is a good thing. I like the ponies, but I found the best way to double your money is to fold it up and put it in your pocket.
Exactly.
If you want to double it, that's how you do it. But I think I'm just looking. There's a horse, I think it's like a 15-1 odds. I think it's called By My Standards.
Oh, you like him, huh?
Yeah, I'm just looking
for
at
her.
Some
I don't
here.
Know, but yeah, I you know, you see some of those numbers and those betting numbers, and I mean, what if the 1-50 guy or 50-1 guy wins? You know, every dollar you put down, you get $50. That'd be a nice win.
That's not bad.
Or if you can get the trifecta.
Yeah, that would be even better.
Have you ever bet on a racehorse? I never have.
Have I?
Ever,
oh, yeah.
Ever in my life. I never have.
Oh, yeah.
Just not my thing, because I just...
It's exciting when you go down to the rail right there by the finish line. If you just go over to, well, it's Belterra now, River Old River Downs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time.
Yeah, well, it's the 145th running. That's hard to believe.
The most exciting 2 minutes in sports is what Alex said.
Have you? Usually I'm working, because it's usually the weekend before Mother's Day, so I'm working a little late and I'm heading home. I usually catch this on the radio. And if you listen to those guys announcing on the radio, it is very exciting. I mean, you tune in for those 2 minutes to hear it.
We need a little clip of that. Somebody just like up in between horses, maximum security, 2 lengths off the lead.
Well, I just hope, you know, I always hate it when one of the horses gets hurt. That's the one I always hope, that with the mud track, nothing ever happens, because that's just awful. Just awful.
No, we'll talk more about that later. And if you get a chance, it's the 145th Kentucky Derby. Always a good time. You know, I look forward to that. Leaving work and trying to catch that as
quickly. Watch it.
Yeah, so I can watch it. Anyway, we got a great show lined up for you this morning. We're going to talk about our plant of the week later on in the program. Lilacs, and they're blooming, Bob.
Yep, and don't forget to get out on our Facebook page for What Plant Am I?
That
is posted. So
that's an old one right there.
It's an old one, and you did another challenge picture. You know, it's a little misleading, because you got to get up on it so people can see the leaf and maybe help, they can identify it from that, or the flower. But it could be a little deceiving. So I'm proud of you. You made it difficult on the listeners. That's great.
That always makes me feel good when you say you're proud of me.
I am proud of you. I like it when you pick something like that.
Well, that was going to the mountain. That's an old one. I just recently have been seeing this coming back.
Yeah.
And it's a great shade plant. So check that out. What Plant Am I? And
that was one that, you know, you enjoyed as a kid back in the 30s and 40s, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah, back in the 30s and 40s. And pretty much for our show this morning, and we encourage you to add a lot of input to this one for about an hour, around 7 o'clock. We're going to really get into it deep and heavy with thrillers, fillers, and spillers. A lot of annuals, a lot of things, a lot of combinations that you can pull together and make those containers look beautiful, your window boxes. Types of soil mixes, fertilizers to use, plant combinations. I'm going to post something interesting that we had in a container last year on our deck. We always mix it up.
Yep.
But I'm excited this morning. I don't know about you, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
I am, and it's annuals, because what's next weekend?
Mother's Day.
It is Mother's Day weekend, and so... You know, we are definitely encouraging people, and I know you're seeing them. I'm seeing people in the garden center. They're buying their annuals early because they realize they need to get the best selection.
Oh, and right now is the best selection.
Yes.
And actually, the forecast looks good. I'd sneak it in. I'd try to get it in.
Well, and, you know, we've sold out of some things. People came in and pre-bought some things.
Don't say that word.
Hang on.
Don't say sold out.
We've reordered. You know, we've reordered. But what people have to realize is the reorders, you know, they're growing, so they might be a smidge smaller than the first run if you go and get it early. So I'm going to encourage people to get there and get it early.
Wait a minute. I don't know how many plants. Alex, are you listening to what Bob's talking about? How many plants you think he has on the bench? Like 5, 6? Get there early, he's going to run out? He better have hundreds.
There is probably, well, we potted, the girls potted, Teresa and Elizabeth potted 30,000 annuals.
That's awesome.
So
pot up another 30,000.
Well, you know how hard it is to get things to repot and to get ready to grow. So, and I'm not trying to panic people, but this is a good weekend to get out early. You can get the stuff, you get the best selection, and then that way you got a great basket or you got a great container, which is what we're going to talk about for mom for next weekend.
And, you know, let's kind of touch on next weekend. It's Mother's Day, and we have to take a quick break. And I just want to ask you, when we come back out of the break, when we talk about Mother's Day, what do you think of? 749-B105, in and around the house. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and if you're just getting up, welcome, and thanks for tuning in to us. And if you're looking outside, a little damp here and there. Just as soon as I came across the river, all of a sudden, it just seemed like it was raining on this side. So it wasn't raining when I left the house. And looks like, according to your radar that you were talking about a moment ago before we went on the air.
I was doing my future cast.
Your future cast. So we're looking at some showers, what, maybe midday?
Developing sometime after lunch, according to that. Now, I'm not a meteorologist. They'll have to go.
I know you're not. I know that. I'd like to look out the window and give you the weather
report. But you know what? How random and how spread out it is. I came in the Cut in the Hill off Highland Avenue. And on top of the Cut in the Hill, the roads were wet. Halfway down, the roads were dry.
Yeah, it was really weird, just like that.
I mean, completely wet and completely dry. It was like a little line.
Scattered. We call those scattered showers.
Walking into the gym this morning, it was a mist. By the time I walked out, there was nothing.
Got it.
It was weird. But, you know, we're going to get that. I mean, I think we're definitely going to get some rain. But it looks like you'll have time to get to the garden centers and get your flowers and get your stuff early today. Maybe get a few things
done.
Well,
it's always enjoyable. I don't know about you. Like, when you're in the greenhouse and you hear the rain hitting the glass or hitting the Lexan, it's just an interesting sound. And it's kind of calming in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So, you know, get out there to the garden centers today. Although if it's raining, a lot of us have greenhouses and so forth. You can just take your time.
Most everybody can shop dry.
You can shop dry. You can just take a leisurely stroll, check out all the goodies that are in full bloom, the annuals that we're going to talk about here just shortly. I always find that very comforting.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great sound to have that, just that mist coming down. And, you know, we're having our second annual customer appreciation again this weekend.
So what does that entail?
So from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. today.
Today only,
can come and get your gas grill tanked. We did this in April. Your gas grill for your small tank filled for $10. You can bring as many as you want. If you bring 100, we don't care. You can get them filled for $10. If you buy something from my store, you can get those filled for $7. That's less than half what you would normally do to trade them in at the gas station or the grocery store or hardware store. So it's a good savings, and it's just something we like to do to give back. And I appreciate my good friend Mike Peterman from Queen City Propane. He really stepped up, and he'll be there grilling the hot dogs, and his guys will be filling tanks, and we'll be helping customers. Should be a fun day.
Well, you were pretty busy when you did that a couple of weeks ago, weren't you?
We filled 86 tanks in those.
So we need to beat 86 today.
We need. And the phone calls have been off the charts. We've advertised it all over. We've talked about it. He's put it all over his Facebook. We've put it on ours. But, you know, it is today only from 9 to 1 at Bard Nurseries. You've got to take your grill tank in.
There you go. And, you know, speaking of Facebook, that's a great way to stay in touch with us. We do our best to get back with you in a timely fashion. And we're somewhat busy this time of year, so just be a little patient with us. And also, always feel free to give us a call here at 513-749-B105. And if you want to catch a past show, Alex does a great job keeping up with the podcast, and it's just a great way to stay in touch with us. Drop us an email in and around the house at b105.com.
Yeah, and we try to get to everything as quick as we can, and if we miss one, we definitely apologize for that, because it's a crazy time of year for us besides doing this in our garden centers.
I've been meaning to get back with Bridget. She had called in a couple of weeks ago and had talked about the weed-free zone.
Yep.
And so I keep forgetting the.
What was her question?
Well, remember she was using it and wasn't seeing any success with it. And originally she had purchased it in the hose end.
Yeah, you know, well, if Bridget, since we didn't get a chance to maybe get to it, I'm sure she's listening. Let's talk about it. So you think maybe she was saying it didn't have as much success as she wanted. So let's talk about maybe a couple of solutions or problems that can go wrong with that. So a couple of things that make me think, okay, why doesn't, because the product we know works. So what could possibly be a solution or a problem that she's doing?
Well, first, you know, my initial thoughts were when it was a hose end, the RTS type of unit.
Yeah, the one you hook to your hose, turn it, pull the trigger.
The siphoning mechanism, how it works, and it's predetermined. It's already set up to siphon at a certain ratio. Maybe that wasn't working properly. So that was our first.
And I've had
our first
one of
thought.
Those.
Yes.
I've had, I haven't had many, but it does happen on a rare occasion, and it wasn't siphoning properly. So that would be a problem. If you're only getting half of the amount of product you're supposed to, it's not going to work. So that could have been one issue, definitely.
The other could be, and I don't like to say this, but sometimes, you know, if the product is rather old, maybe it's been sitting around for a couple of years. I always say you get about 3 years life expectancy.
Yeah, I think two.
I say three. It just depends. But, you know, how old was the product?
Did it freeze? Was it put in a barn outside? Did it get frozen? Or, because that will separate that product, and that'll have some issues a lot faster. But if it's garage kept where it doesn't freeze and it's fairly insulated and warm, I think you can get 3 years, but you're pushing it.
So what else?
The other way is, how is it applied? Did you apply it and it rained really, really hard within 3 to 4 hours? So with all the rains that we've been getting on and off, and they've been popping up, if you sprayed thinking you had plenty of time and then all of a sudden the rain came. And I think one of the biggest ones is a lot of people, and I've seen this when I drive by in neighborhoods, they mow their grass and then they spray immediately.
What you do not want to do, you do not want to mow 2 days before you apply, nor 2 days after you apply.
Exactly. You have to get enough surface contact with the chemical in order for it to work. I personally think that's a really big one because I've tried it because I want to see whether that's actually true or not. Mm-hmm. So I mowed and I sprayed. Clover that's pretty low, so I wanted to get rid of some of the clover when it wasn't flowering because I always like to wait for it to be done flowering for the bees. But when it was done, it did okay with. But like dandelions that I had mowed down and got rid of and some of the taller weeds, I did not have much success. Now, if I wait the 2 days, I have a lot better success.
You know, I think that would be something very interesting to do. Is to find a gnarly patch of some stuff in a lawn somewhere and do various tests with various products.
Well, I tried it on ground ivy as well, and that did not work as well. If I waited 2 days, I had much better success.
And when you say common ground ivy, you're saying Creeping Charlie.
Yes.
Got it.
Which we had another person, Roger, actually messaged me, and I couldn't find it. So, Roger, I apologize that I didn't get back to you on Facebook because I saw it and then didn't get to it and was going to come back, and I don't know where it went, so I lost it. But he was asking about the wild violets from last week that we had posted. Is that Creeping Charlie?
No, but a lot of, you know, the Creeping Charlie does get a blue bloom.
It does, and it's very similar looking, but it is not. The picture that was on Facebook that Roger commented on was wild violet. It was not Creeping Charlie, but a good question, and the reason I brought it up is because it's easy, even for you and I sometimes, to misidentify things because so many things look very similar unless you really analyze the shape of the leaf, the flower that it has. When's it blooming compared to some of the other stuff? So weeds can be tricky at times, and you know, making sure you're using the right product is what you want, and then going back to, was it Barb?
Well, here's the... It was Bridget. And I will call and reach out to Bridget. But here's the beauty of the whole situation is that Fertilume will most definitely replace that at no charge.
Yes.
And you can take that back to your local garden center and just say, hey, I'm not happy with this, or I don't think this is working like it should be. We'll be happy to switch that out for you. So, feel free to do that, and that's why I like Fertilume, no questions asked.
Absolutely, and I got one more thing. You know, if you got one of the Fertilume hose-in sprayers, the ready-to-spray where you hook it to your hose, if it doesn't seem like it's working, you can take that lid off and actually use it as a concentrate.
Not everything, but the weed-free zone you can.
Weed-free zone you can.
Yes.
So if it's weed-free zone, you could take that off and go ahead and mix it.
And that was one of the solutions we had mentioned to Bridget. But anyway, that's just a great way to stay in touch with us via email, Facebook. We'd like to go over and answer those kind of questions. And if anything's bothering you, feel free to give us a call. I am Tony Works here at B105's In and Around the House with Bob Bard. We have to take another quick break. And let's talk about some of the things we put on Facebook last week when we come back from the break. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard. And I met up with some good old boys last night. I meant to tell you that. And I didn't get to bed as early as I'd like to, so I'm feeling it a little bit this morning. But a good friend of mine from Great American Insurance, Chuck Bricky, retired.
We so he had a big retirement party?
Had a retirement party for him over at the Yard House. And I had a couple Guinnesses. The first time in my 9 years or nine season here that I had a couple beers on a Friday night.
That's all right. Okay. You still beat me in.
But no, I'm
and
okay.
Alex, I was the last one in today. What's going on with that? So,
yeah, Alex was here early.
I know. I was last. I'm so proud of you guys. You guys are in. You had a party, and it's funny. We got to tell the listeners. Tony's like, man, I was out. What time did you get home?
9-ish.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be laughing at you, but come on, man. Yeah. That's not late.
Well, for me, it is on a Friday night.
So last night was my son's senior prom. So I did really good. I got home. We went and took pictures. My wife and I had just a dinner, but we were in our work clothes because we worked so late and we had to get pictures. But so we ate at home, got everything ready for today to try to make my morning a little easier. And I got to bed around 10:30. I'm like, this is great. But what I didn't plan on was him coming home around 12:45 and the couple dogs were barking at him and they made noise because there were some friends with him. So, yeah, so I went to bed. I'm thinking, man, I'm like Tony. I'm getting to bed a little early. This is great. And then I woke up at 1 o'clock.
You'll feel better. So, I'm just telling you.
And then 3:30 came early.
It's amazing. As you get older, you realize how important it is to get to bed a little earlier. So,
hey, you know what else today is? May the 4th be with you.
Oh, God. All right, Bob. May the 4th be
it's
with
It's May
you.
The 4th.
I know it is.
Yeah.
So, anyway, going back to our Facebook page before we went into the break, just as I've been strolling around through the garden center and so forth this past week, it's like whenever I walk by something, it's like, wow, you look pretty cool. And so I've been kind of like snapping some photographs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't resist the other day, as I stated on Facebook, I was walking by... You know, I love salvias, and this was one called Rockin' Fuchsia.
Yeah, it's pretty, isn't it?
The color is impeccable in this particular salvia.
I love that. I love that color. It's a beautiful color. I love the foliage. If people get to the Facebook page, they will see what we're talking about. And it was posted last week, so they'll have to scroll down just a little bit. But, you know, what a great plant. What a great pollinator. Fuchsias are good for that as well. So, I mean, the rock and fuchsia is beautiful for that with the salvia.
Yeah, look at the height on it. It gets 2 to 3 foot.
It's a monster.
2 to 3 feet, I should say, in height. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
love the color in it.
That would definitely not be a filler or a spiller.
I think it could be a filler.
In a big planting bed.
When we get into that topic.
I know.
We'll
we're kind of teasing people just a
we'll
little bit.
We'll hone in on it. What we're talking about is we're going to talk about annuals, thrillers, fillers, and spillers in the 7 o'clock hour. And we're going to hit it hard, and we're going to tell you about some cool combinations. But in the meantime, focusing here on the salvia called Rockin' Fuchsia, this color is impeccable, and you need to look for this one at your local garden centers and nurseries. And salvias, in my opinion, along with the begonias, has really... kind of taken center stage in recent years.
It's come a long ways. It's not just
black
and blue.
Well, black and blue. You got black and bloom, rock and fuchsia. There's rock and purple.
You know what I like, actually, if you keep looking down a little further on the tag, and you took a picture of the tag so our listeners could see it, the part hardy to 32 degrees. It can handle a little cold, which means it's going to last a little longer in the season than some of the others.
You know, you just brought something up because I know you've had people come into the garden center and say this. It's like, hey, my black and blue salvia came back.
Yes. If it's a mild enough winter in the right spot.
Isn't that interesting?
Very rarely, but it has happened. But, you know, 32 degrees, you know, that's not too far, you know, if you went a couple zones south, I know it says zone 10 and 11, but, you know, if you got down into Tennessee or some of those, it might actually act like a perennial.
Yeah, you get a little south of here, but I mean, I'm just amazed that when people tell me that it came back, the black and blue salvia, originally when I first heard that, I kept thinking, it probably reseeded itself and you're just seeing it again as a result of the seeds. And oh no, it came back. It's
well,
the same plant.
You know, if it's getting heat off the foundation or something's causing it to be warmer. Mm-hmm. But this is another one where we need to mention, you need to know what you're buying. It's going to be smaller when you get it in the garden center, especially now. But you have to remember, it gets 2 to 3 feet tall. That's your waist. That is a lot of height on an annual. So you got to be prepared to plant it in the right spot, or make sure your container is large enough to handle that.
That's the key. You need the container that can accommodate it.
Yes.
And it's awesome.
You know what color that reminds me of, those colors, is the tattoo series, the Vinca tattoo mm-hmm. series. There's one out there that's really pretty like that.
Yeah. I have a question about that. Did you grow that?
We grew a couple different types. I forget exactly which ones.
What's your spin on it at this point thus far?
So far, it's been a showpiece.
We're talking about Periwinkle.
Yep.
The tattoo series. You know, that is meant for, from what I'm hearing, containers.
It is a beautiful, beautiful plant. It's been very disease and bug free. Haven't had much issues with it. Growing well. I'm very excited about it. I hope when people walk through the garden center, they see mm-hmm. it and they go, this one may be worth looking at. So really may be worth looking at. But the color, annual colors, I know there's always been beautiful colors, but there is just some exquisite material out there.
Oh, it's I'm excited.
Yes. Can't wait to get
we're going to dig into
about
it.
About a half hour, we're going to really hammer it.
And just in a moment, too, we're going to talk about the other photograph that I took of the hosta called Island Breeze in just a moment. And we have Nancy with us, but we're going to go to a quick break, Nancy, before we get to you. She has a question about some issues going on with mulch. 749-B105, in and around the house. I am Tony Works here alongside with Bob Bard, and we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard on the road again. that's Willie Nelson. Right?
That was Willie.
Willie.
Gotta love Willie.
Look at Alex. He's,
I know, he's laughing.
Season.
You know what? But B105 in April turned 50.
Yeah.
50 years old.
50
How about that?
Old?
You know? Isn't it exciting to be part of a station?
I was 5 years
like
old when B105 came about, right?
Yeah, it's really exciting to be a part of and be working for B105. And, you know, congratulations to them.
Come on, Bob. Quit sucking up. We're going to go to our call. We have Nancy on the line. Good morning, Nancy. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. So what's going on?
Well, I live in a neighborhood where we have an HOA that deals with our landscaping.
Uh-huh.
And last year they put down some mulch for our flower beds. And I noticed late last year and over winter, underneath the top little bit of mulch,
mm-hmm.
some white spots.
Yeah.
That I'm thinking of some type of mold.
It is. And you know, that's right off the bat, that's telling me that it's too thick, more than likely.
Okay.
It needs to be turned. It sounds as if they just hire somebody to come in and put mulch on top of mulch on top of mulch, and it's happening year after year after year. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in a situation where, you know, it's very difficult for moisture, you know, to penetrate that thickness of the mulch, especially as the thicker it gets tough, and that's not a good situation to be in. Have you ever measured it by chance, the thickness?
No, I haven't, but I've also noticed there's spots where it looks like a landslide, for lack of a better way to describe it, where, you know, it's up to a certain point, and then all of a sudden it like caves in.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of mulch to me.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of mulch, and it happens a lot, unfortunately, because they're just paying people to come in and put some mulch down, and they're paying per yard. Occasionally, I've seen some condos go in, and they have people rake it out and then redo it.
That's the proper way to do it.
For you, the homeowner, though, a good solution would be to take a rake or one of the garden weasels and just kind of turn your mulch every so often to kind of aerate, basically, and loosen it up. That'll help it break down a little bit faster. That'll also keep it from getting as much of the molds and fungus that you're going to see, especially now that we're this wet. If we get hot, you're going to see a lot more of those. So if you can loosen that up and rake it and kind of turn it a little bit, that would help a lot.
Yeah, it's getting air down into the mulch, and actually, you know, I would measure that too. And you know, maybe you might want to make somebody aware of the situation. You know, just measure the thickness of it. It shouldn't be more than 3 inches. 2 to 3 inches is about the max.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, getting oxygen air to that soil surface and to the root systems of your plants, you know, it could be any of them, your shrubs, your trees, your perennials and annuals. That is really important.
Do you plant some plants yourself, or do you have anything kind of you really like that you've kind of put in front of your spot to have some extra color?
Yeah, I usually plant some impatiens right at the door, sidewalk.
Yeah, and that's where exactly you don't want too much mulch, because if they're buried, you're going to have some issues. So I'm sure when you plant, you probably pull it away. But, yeah, if you could just loosen it up, even if you have to, take a little bit out yourself, throw in the garbage can, just dispose of it any way you can. You know, a little work on your part. You bought a condo, so you didn't have to do that stuff. But sometimes you do to make sure your plants are extra healthy and a lot prettier.
Okay.
All right, Nancy, thanks for sharing. Have a great weekend. You want to watch the Derby later by chance? You have a horse in this race?
No, I'm actually going to see the Cincinnati Cyclones.
Oh, there you go. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Will you enjoy that?
Game 5 of round 2.
Oh, that's awesome. Hopefully, what is the series? Are they leading?
Unfortunately, they're not.
That's what I thought.
They're down 3-1 right now. They've got to win the next three games.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope. Go Cyclones.
Exactly. Go Cyclones.
There you go. All right, Nancy, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks. You too.
You know, I immediately thought when she was having some mulch issues that a lot of times this time of year, the black mulches and so forth, the hardwood mulches, a lot of times when you purchase those, especially if they're bagged, you'll see a little bit of mold inside the bag, and usually that dissipates. Once you spread that and air gets to it, you know, it's nothing to really be concerned about, but sometimes you'll see that.
Usually when it starts sunny and getting warm after we've had a wet spell like this, that's when you'll start to see some of that orangey fungus growing up on top of the mulch. It's coming. I mean, we're going to have some issues. You're going to have some issues. Really doesn't matter. Any hardwood mulch, because of the breakdown and just the makeup of it, you're going to have some issues.
You know, which leads me to also add to the mulch topic right here. You know, I know that you have probably been selling a lot more pine straw in recent years, some of the pine products, you know, the cypress mulches. Those are really good mulches, and you don't have those kind of issues that Nancy was kind of talking about.
I still sell a lot of hardwood mulch, but I'll tell you, we are selling a lot more pine straw, a lot more pine nuggets, the large, the medium, even all the way down to the pine fines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's four sizes we carry. I really like that mulch. If you want a low maintenance, easy mulch, pretty economical because you don't have to replace it as often. You don't get the bugs. You don't get the diseases. Still good airflow for the roots and moisture getting through. You know, if you're kind of fed up a little bit with the hardwood mulches, because let's face it, black mulch, if you want to do your landscaping, step back and go, what looks the prettiest? Black mulch still looks the prettiest.
Everybody likes the black mulch. They really do. You know, there's something else about the pine products and so forth that I really like. As you get a little bit older like me and you don't want to lug those heavy mulch bags around, it's a lot lighter.
Well, with all
easier
the rain,
to work with, too.
With all the rain, the mulch bags are a little wet.
Yeah.
You know, they get a little heavy, especially that triple shred, because, man, that just stuff seems to really absorb the moisture. But, you know, you were telling Nancy the key is 2 to 3 inches. And if you have more than that, just maybe you don't mulch this year. Just turn it. Or let it break down over the summer and then mulch in the fall. So you don't have to mulch. And I know people are going to be like, I can't believe you said that. Now we're not going to sell as much mulch. But the truth is, if you've got a lot, turn it over.
What is your take right now with mulching? I know it seems as if people have a tendency to really rush out and get mulch and get it down early.
It's May.
It's. But with this kind of wetness that we've had, you know, I sometimes want to sell products, but at the same time, I'm also conveying to the customer, you know, get your mulch, but don't put it down right away. Allow things to dry out a little bit.
You know, when we talked in March, I would have totally agree with you. I think now that we're getting to May, because, you know, like tomorrow is supposed to be sunny, Monday sunny on Tuesday till later in the day, you know, and all these showers are going to pop up, but you know, I think, you know, you got all the graduation parties coming up. You've got, I think at this point, the key though is not to mulch too heavy. So I think that's key. And sometimes look at the mulch you have. If it's really crusty and really just solid and it's hard, rake that up and turn that, or even rake it out and remove and then remulch.
Do you remember some issues? I haven't heard anybody talk about this one in a long, long time. Shotgun spore mold.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
It's still there.
It's still there, but I don't see it or hear people talk about it as much.
Any hardwood mulch is going to have it.
So, and that's when the temperatures, the humidity, and the moisture levels all have to be just Johnny on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
But the shotgun spore mold that we're talking about, the mold spores are about the size of the, you would see, it's just like you would dot something on a piece of paper with an ink,
just,
ink pen.
Just take a pen and drop it, yeah. That dot.
And it gets all over everything. The woodwork of the house, the cars, it's crazy, crazy, crazy stuff.
But, yeah, I agree. I just don't, I use cypress mulch. I love the cypress mulch. I like the bug resistance, the disease resistance. It lasts longer. So even though you spend a little bit more compared to a bag of black mulch, I think because it lasts longer,
I like the grade A.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice, nice, nice stuff. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Get out on our Facebook page because just here shortly, we're going to tell you what the plan is. What plan am I? I had to go to the mountain, and this is an old one. It's been around for a while. And let's talk about it, Bob, when we come out of the break. How's that? We'll be right back. You're killing me. Welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And while we were in the break, we have Gail on the line with us. I think as we were talking about mulch, that might open up some questions more people might have about mulch. Good morning, Gail. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
We're doing okay. What's going on?
Good. So, sorry, I wanted to build on that mulch question. So I put some new beds down in front of my house, and I had read to have a thicker layer of mulch to choke out weeds. So I did that, and I've not had a weed problem, but I have noticed some mold. But what I'm curious about is there's one particular area around some shrubs that I put, and it seems moldy, and now I've got some mushroom fungus growing. How can I know if it's a mulch problem or a dirt problem? Like, what can I do to correct it? Because if I'm not correcting the right part, if I'm even doing the right thing.
Well, usually mushrooms are an indication of decay, you know, things that decomposing under the soil, it could be, or it could be part of the mulch itself. So typically, okay, like out in the yard, when you see a lot of mushrooms popping up after you get, you know, some decent amounts of rainfall, a lot of times, you know, there might be some decaying roots that are underground that are still decomposing. And all of a sudden, you know, things are just right for those mushrooms to poke their heads up and come up through the soil surface. So it could be that, or it could be the mulch, one of the two. You know, just make sure as you get close to the shrub with your mulch, taper it down as you get close to the trunk. Or to the stems?
I got a question for you, Gail. The soil that you did, was it a raised bed or did you just use the existing soil that was there?
It was a combination of making it into a raised bed, and then I have horse pasture, so I collected some of the dirt from, you know, behind the barn thinking, oh, this is going to be fabulous, you know, adding manure to it. And then I noticed that I'm also, whatever I've done is creating that those mushrooms and spores in the mulch.
Yeah.
And I'm also somehow managed to kill my bushes. I'm surprised what little stubs came back this year.
Well, and some of that could be the plants. Some of it, you know, whenever you're putting some manure in there, you need to make sure it's aged. If it's too fresh, sometimes that could cause an issue and some burning. If it's just some soil and it's been composted for a while, that's probably not your issues. Make sure that you're not mulched too thick. The mushrooms, probably because of how wet things are,
right,
is probably the main thing that you're seeing. Starting to see some of that from some other issue, from other areas as well. You know, when you say you lost things, do you know what plants you had in there?
There was no stepping previously, and for the life of me, I can't remember the name of this shrub. It's going to grow into a fairly large, it could be a tree or a shrub, and it's kind of got wispy, fiery ends to it. It kind of looks like a burning bush, a flower to it, I guess.
All right, well, and some of it just could be the plant maybe didn't adapt well. There could be some coincidences that you've had some issues. How many plants were in there that you lost in that bed?
Just one in this area.
Yeah, just one.
It was the one and only one. Well, no, that's not entirely true because I planted just other little plants around, and if they didn't work, and I wasn't lost, but I really wanted the shrub in this area.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, as long as you're using a quality shrub and it fits for that area, it sounds like there's not a lot of issues going on other than a coincidence there. So I think just make sure you're not mulching too heavy. You know, now's a great time to get to the garden center. Where do you live?
I'm in southeast Indiana.
Go over there, maybe see McCabe's over there. They've got a good selection. They could probably help you and maybe take a picture of that area. See, you know, that way they can help you kind of get a good choice maybe for that spot. It's a possible maybe that plant didn't adapt to that spot. You know, I wouldn't be too concerned about the soil. As long as your mulch isn't too heavy and the bed's raised, I think you'll probably be fine. Just maybe pick another one and find something you like, and you'll probably be fine.
Okay, well, thanks for your expertise. Appreciate your time.
All right, Gail, have a good weekend. You know, usually when you see mushrooms, it's just the result of the situations at hand, you know, with what we're experiencing with Mother Nature. You know, we've had, you know, a lot of moisture, you know, and that all ties in together with it. And just when you get mushrooms, don't be alarmed. It's kind of the result of.
If I ever lime my yard, because occasionally I will lime the yard, not very often, I get mushrooms. I throw the pH off too high, I think. I think it goes too high to the alkaline side. I don't know why, but all of a sudden, if I do that, I'll get some mushrooms, especially in the wet season. But, you know, we'll come back to some more mulch, and anybody wants to call and have any questions, we'd love to talk to them about it. But you posted some pictures on Facebook, and especially
what plant am I? This plant, I just remembered it. You know, I remember it when I was a kid. You would see a lot of it, and it's called Burwellia. It's a great shade plant and
annual.
It's an annual. And we just picked some up here recently, and I'm like, you know what? You're pretty cool. So I had to take a picture of it, post it on our Facebook page. And I thought, you know, this would be a good what plant am I? Because it's one that you don't see too often.
No, you don't. And we're not growing this one, but it is a great plant. It is an annual. It's considered a medium height. It's about 12 to 16 inches. The spread on it's only about 12 to 14 inches. So, and it's a kind of a blue flower, green foliage, mounding habit. I would classify it as a filler. It's not a spiller. And it's probably not the thriller.
It would make a good filler.
It'd be a good filler.
For a shade container. Something in a shady spot. Morning sun would be ideal.
Yep.
I like this one because it's very heat tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
No deadheading. Now, don't we all like that?
That's easy.
So easy to care for, low maintenance.
Doesn't require a lot of fertilizer. It's not a heavy, junky feeder like the Calibrachoas and the Petunias, so it's not a heavy feeder. But if you put it in full sun, it will die.
Man, don't be so brutal.
I was straightforward with the listeners.
All right, Bob. Hey,
Don't sugarcoat it.
What do you think about that one, Alex?
We're truthful at in and around the house.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, you were right. Jennifer Reeder, Burwellia. That's our what plant am I?
You know, that was one. You also posted some cool hostas on the Facebook page as well.
Yes, and this is one of my favorites, and I love the wide, like the dark green margins on this particular hosta called Island Breeze, and probably most importantly for me, you know, I'm all about foliage, but it's red stems that come up from the base underneath that foliage really looks purple color too. It's very, very pretty. Looks sharp.
Yeah, and there's some really cool hostas out there. I mean, guacamole. Atlantis. I mean, there's so many hostas out there. It's kind of silly how many different varieties. But this Island Breeze is a beautiful
hosta. I love this one. Do you have a favorite hosta, by the way?
You know, there's so many out there. But the answer is yes. I actually have one. I don't have it in my yard, but it's called Kimono Dragon.
Yeah.
The monster green leaf. It's kind of like a Sun and Substance size. It's a big one.
Interesting. No, we could do a whole show on just hostas alone.
We can, but we can't because 7 o'clock is coming up, and we have got an annual show for you.
Yes, we do. And also, you're not the only person with an event going on today, by the way. Did you know that?
No.
Our good buddy Todd reached out to me and said that they're having their early bird sale between 7 and 9. Get in there at Baitons, get a rubber worm, and you can shop all day. Present the worm and get 10% off of everything. That's wholesale price of annuals and planters. It's a great sale, a good time. So you got an event going on. So do our good friends down at Baitons. And we got to take another quick break. When we come out of the break, we're going to talk about thrillers, fillers, and spillers. We're going to talk about annuals, and we want you to share some of your favorites with us when we come back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard. And if you're just getting up, welcome and thanks for joining in. If you're looking outside, it's a little misty. So we're probably going to look at this for most of the day.
It's going to be a gray day.
I'm sorry to say, but still don't let it deter you. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Most of us have areas where you can shop and get out of the weather. And days like this, when you get that little light rainfall and so forth, it's kind of tranquil. It's kind of relaxing when you're walking around inside the greenhouses.
And selection is
at its best.
At its best.
At its best.
Yes.
And before we went into the break, we were telling our audience that we're going to get down and dirty and deep into container gardening.
That's right. We're going to get dirty, aren't we?
We're going to talk about thrillers, fillers, and spillers. And I love the container garden. I get excited about this topic in itself. It's one of my favorite things to do and get all these really cool and interesting combinations together and make it pop.
Yes, and if our listeners have any combinations they love, now's the time. We want to hear from them.
Share it with us. Share it with us.
Because this is annual time. This is annual go time. When we think of when are we going to start getting our annuals, when are we going to start planting, and when it comes to containers, we're talking about small containers, medium containers, large containers, window boxes, deck rail planters. I mean,
The above.
We are going to talk about everything.
So when we talk about containers, let's talk about various styles and different things we can choose from when we go to the garden center.
Yep.
Ceramic containers. They're beautiful, nice colors. What you can choose from is incredible.
Absolutely. You'll get the solid ones. And this is when it gets into what is your personal opinion? You know, what do you like best? Because, you know, this is one thing we can't tell you what pot is the best necessarily to choose as far as what color. Now, we can tell you what to put in it and the flowers. But when it comes to the pot itself, that becomes a personal choice. Because I love the cobalt blue. Glazed pots. I just think those are blue. Gorgeous.
It's a top seller.
Yes.
And a few years ago, it used to be the oxblood, mm-hmm. you know, the red. It was popular there for a while. But, you know, there's so many different colors. Some of those falling colors on the glazed pottery.
Yeah, where it starts kind of like maybe even like a cream and then kind of as it goes down fades to a darker color.
Right.
Yeah, I think those are really neat. You know, the key, I think, with containers, though, is make sure what size you choose is you get the right amount of flowers in it. I think that's really important. I think some people underplant and some people overplant. So for an example, if you have like just a 5 or 6 inch pot, you're not going to try to stuff 2 or 3 things in there. There's just not going to be enough soil for the roots as they grow to really do well.
So picking the right size container is very important.
It's key.
And you know, also too, when we talk about the ceramic pots, the glazed pottery, there's so many things to choose from. Keep in mind, there's a little bit of weight there. So if you have to move these at any point in time, you might want to take into consideration how heavy or how difficult it might be to move it. So if it's going to be a little too heavy for you, then you might go with a plastic pot.
Plastic or the resins.
Or the resins. something a little lighter in weight. So keep that in mind. You don't want to hurt yourself, and you certainly want to be able to move something around rather easily.
So let's talk, go back for a second. We're talking about containers. What do you feel is one of the most, let's say we're just going to use a glazed container. What is one of the most important things you can do besides the plant, but before you put anything in it, what is something that you would recommend?
The first thing that I do?
Yep.
I will put something in a bottom like broken clay pots, maybe stone, because I want to provide for really good drainage.
I think that is key, and that's exactly where I asked the question.
Are you trying to stump me?
No, I knew you were going there, but that's very important. That's the first thing. It's kind of like doing the landscaping or building a house. You got to have a good foundation. If you just take a pot and you got to make sure there's a hole or some sort of drainage hole or it has drainage capabilities. If it doesn't have that, you have to create one.
Right.
And then you have to add the gravel so that that way, as the soil kind of, as it percolates down through, the moisture percolates through the soil, it really has a chance to drain.
Do you have any tips for people when they start adding soil to those large containers, how they can kind of cut down on the amount of soil they have to use and maybe lighten the load?
So if you have a really large container, the pine nuggets actually makes a great filler.
That they do.
You know, get a bag of that. It's much, much cheaper than the soil. So you can fill it with something in the bottom. It'll also drain well, but it'll fill so you don't have to spend all the money on
the
soil.
Maybe fill it up like 25% near the bottom with pine nuggets.
Yep.
That's a good idea.
We're talking about a large container. If it's something 18 inches deep,
you don't want to
I'm not doing it. You know, we're talking about something that's 24, even that's getting pushy, you know, 30, 36 inch high planter, a large planter.
Right. Now, you know, I've heard of people using like empty water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just put the caps back on them. We'll lighten the load, fill up the bottom portion of it and make it a little easier, and you know, for you to move. And also you'll use a little less soil.
Absolutely. And when it comes to containers, I typically use a little more of the resin planters and containers. One, they're easy to move because I still like to take mine in the winter. I have some that are 15 years old. I spent a lot of money on them. And I want them to last, but they've lasted 15 years. So, for example, I spent $210 15 years ago on a planter. So that gives you an idea of cost. But it's lasted 15 years. So when you sit down and you do the math, I mean, you're like $12, $13 a year. And every year, there's no sign of them breaking down because I do bring them in the winter and try to protect them a little more.
Well, not everybody will do that because they like to use their pots and create that nice winter look with porch pot decorations.
Absolutely.
And greens. But you need to take a little bit of that soil out because if it remains wet, what happens to moisture in the winter? It expands.
Yep.
It turns into ice and expands. And, you know, it's not always easy to replace one of your favorite pots if it cracks. So you need to protect that stuff.
Yeah, especially the glazed pottery or if you have clay pottery of some sort. If you leave it outside and over the winter and it gets a lot of moisture like we had this year and it freezes and then thaws and freezes again, it will pop and crack that pot.
All right. So we've narrowed it down with the type of pots that you can pick up at your local garden centers or nurseries. You know, even concrete pots as well. So let's take it to the next level. So we're going to provide for good drainage. What about soils?
Oh, I think this is vital. You can go and you can get 99-cent bag of potting soil.
And you get 99 cents worth of performance.
That's exactly right. You don't know what's in it. It's going to have weeds in it. It's not going to perform well. Your annuals are not going to do well. I think this is vital. I think this is one of the keys. I never tell people to overspend or, you know, everybody's on a budget. But if you're going to do something right, the soil is probably one of the most important parts. So buying a good soilless potting mix, especially maybe something organic, you're going to really be happy with your plants.
Do you have a favorite soil that you like to use?
It used to be called Fafford. Fafford is made, I forget who makes it now, but Fafford.
Sunshine?
Sungrow. I like that. There's one called the Jolly Gardener, which is a good one.
And are you a Jolly Gardener?
I am a Jolly Gardener, if you can't tell. You know, and I like the one you like, Happy Frog. Happy Frog seems to be a good one.
Hold on to that thought.
Oh,
because
I
have a couple of favorite go-to soils, and we'll talk more about that when we come out of the break. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard here at In and Around the House, and this is your moment to chime in, 749-B105. Tell us what your favorite containers are, we're going to talk about soils, we're going to talk about fertilizers, then we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, the dirty part, the flowers. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and I think when you look outside, we're going to see a lot of this throughout the day, unfortunately. And also, it's the 145th running of the Kentucky Derby, and it looks like it's going to be another sloppy one. That makes for an interesting horse race, to say the least.
Be a lot of wet hats.
But I think, Alex, what did you say? It was the most exciting 2 minutes of sports right there, the Kentucky Derby. So hopefully you might have some derby parties to go to later on, and you don't get rained out for.
Yes, and we are the most exciting 3 hours in radio.
That's right.
Did you know that?
The most exciting and
most exciting 3 hours, especially with talking about flowers.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about soils before we went into the break, and I had mentioned a couple that I like. What about you, Tony? What soils do you like in your
I have a couple of go-tos, and one of my favorites, I'm a Fertiloom fan. I love the Ultimate Potting Mix, and I like this. I like to kind of cut it, mix it 50-50 with Michigan Peat's topsoil.
You mean one bag to one bag, or you actually just, do like cubic foot?
Well, it depends because you can buy it in various sizes, but I just like to mix it 50-50. And when that texture comes together, I think it's a wonderful texture for container gardening and so forth. And I've had a great deal of success with it. And immediately after, I'll fertilize with the Osmocote on top.
Yep.
So I love Fertiloom's Ultimate Potting Mix, and I know you and I differ on that, but I've had great success with it.
I like
it. And
the
old saying is, why wait for a miracle when you can use the Fertiloom Ultimate Potting Mix?
I like the Fertiloom Ultimate Potting Mix, but what you have to realize, and this is, I'm glad you brought that up, is some fertilizers
are different.
Some soils are all, they're all a little different. Some have more peat mix, some have more bark mix. There is a difference in soil. It goes back to my statement. If you buy in a 99-cent bag of potting soil, you're getting 99 cents worth. A lot of these companies have spent a lot of time and research getting the proper formula so your annuals will have much better success. And is that true? Yes, absolutely. A good soil will make a good will make a big difference. Ultimate Potting Mix is great because it does have a peatier makeup, so it's going to hold a little more moisture, so maybe you don't have to water as often. So there is some pluses to that. It's just some of the other ones I like are a little more barky just because they tend, for my annuals, I see the root system develop a lot deeper.
Yeah, I mean, bark comes into play, but a lot of times when people use various potting soils and it's really barky and they're doing things inside, then that leads to fungus gnat issues. So anyway, you know, it's what you prefer and what you've had great success with, but that's why I like to mix that with a little bit of the topsoil. And I think they keep one another in check because a lot of times if you're using a real heavy peat mix and it gets dry, what does it do? It shrinks away from the side of the pot.
It does.
And when it shrinks away from the side of the pot and you water that pot, the water goes through it rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were able to lift that whole root system out, you would see it still dry on the side, and you think that it's had enough water.
And that's where going to the independent garden centers who grow flowers and help develop flowers and create the color, you're going to get the advantage. Are you going to spend a little more than maybe going to a box store and getting a 99-cent bag of soil? Yes. Are you going to get 10 times the value? Absolutely. It's just going to make life easier because you're not going to have to water every day. It's not going to stay too wet. It's already set up for success. And when you're set for success before you start, that means your success is going to be 1,000 times higher.
What about Fox Farm products?
Fox Farm's got
Happy Frog is a great soil.
Yep. You love that one. I like it. It's a good mixture.
It's a good one.
You know, all of us can't carry every single type of soil, but a lot of those quality mixes are very, very, very similar. And that's the key.
What about, what's your take on the soils that have the moisture elements about it, moisture control?
They're fine as long as you make sure you're still testing the soil by sticking your finger down in there and feeling the soil. Because some of those, if you're watering every day and they're already retaining moisture, you're going to actually rot your plants.
I'm not a fan of it.
So, good.
I'm just not. I don't know. I think you can get into some trouble with the moisture control soils.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hope some of our peers don't say, hey, Tony, why are you saying that? I like to control it myself. I think using moisture control products or soils, you know, you're looking for a quick way out or an easy way to do it. And maybe it does work, but I think when you get into those prolonged periods of a lot of rain and moisture, it stays too wet.
Well, and that's why you got to be careful. I don't personally use the extra water retention soils. I don't in my own containers. I like to control it myself as well. I understand the value and why people might want to use them, but you have to feel, you have to check your soil. That, like, when the soils that you and I use, you can almost count on a regular schedule, I'm going to water this often. I mean, it's almost perfect every day unless it's raining or a little cooler. You know, and I still feel my soil to see if it needs moisture. I'll lift the pot.
If it's heavy.
But yeah. Those moisture retention soils will hold extra moisture. And if you have a plant that likes to be drier and you water it, you will have some problems with it.
What about soils that have fertilizer in them? Let's talk about fertilizers.
I like to control my own fertilizer like I do the moisture. Osmocote's a good one. I love adding some Start and Grow to the planters and put it on top and water it in. But personally for annuals, I absolutely love the liquid fertilizers. And I like doing them on a regular basis. Most annuals are junkies. They like to be fed. They like to have the nutrients. So I like to control mine. And one specifically is Jack's fertilizers.
If you're using a lot of petunias or million bells, the Calibrachoas, most definitely.
Absolutely. What about you? What about fertilizers for you?
I don't like the soils with the fertilizers, and I'll tell you why. A lot of times, if they're sitting out on the lot right now, a lot of those bags will take on moisture. And what activates the fertilizer? Moisture. And when it says it will feed up to 3 months or up to 4 months, how long do you know it's going to last?
Yeah, because it's already wet and it's already breaking down.
It's already wet and it's already breaking down. So that's why I don't go with the soils with the fertilizers.
Agreed.
I love Osmocote, and I'll tell you why. Once you use those soilless mixes, you get everything planted. Then I put the Osmocote on the top layer of the soil, and I scratch it in with my fingertips. And every time I water or every time it rains, it's breaking down slowly and it's providing nutrients. Now, I will tell you this. The Osmocote, get the one with the pink cap. There are a lot more micronutrients in that one versus the green cap, which has the major three.
Yep.
Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash. The pink cap gives you those three major fertilization ingredients and along with those other micronutrients for those soilless mixtures.
And it's going to feed for a while. That's like the Start and Grow from Fertilome that I really like. It feeds for 3 to 4 months. So if you don't want to do a liquid fertilizer, you know you can put some of that on there. Like you said, it's kind of scratch it in. And as you water, it will slowly feed those roots. And then that way the plant can absorb all the nutrients that it wants to. And it also has all those micronutrients to help to give you some extra balance to give you a healthy plant.
Got it. One last key thing. Let's talk about watering. And then we're going to take another quick break in a moment. And then we'll get into the plants. So when it comes to watering, in my opinion, this is one of the most important things that you can do. If you err to any side when it comes to watering, err to the side of it being dry versus too wet.
Amen. Preach, brother. Bring it on. I mean, I totally agree.
It has to be drier. Give me a hallelujah, brother.
Yeah,
I like that. Watering is so, so important.
And, so annuals, that's what people don't realize. You don't always have to water every day. And especially if you have some shade annuals, you may not water for 3 to 4 days. You got to feel the soil, but most annuals will perform better if they tend to stay not dry all the time, but they dry a little bit and then you give them moisture.
Right. And here's just a little tip. If any of your plants are in a wilting phase or a stage, okay, and you water it and you come back an hour later and it's not perked up, don't water it again because that's an indicator it's too wet.
Yes.
So a lot of times you'll see a plant wilt when it's too wet, and you'll also see it wilt when it's too dry. So if you water it and you come back an hour or so later and it's still in a wilted stage, you might be in trouble.
And that happens a lot, especially towards summer if it stays a little wet with the petunias and the Calibrachoas. If those hanging baskets and you're watering them every day and you're keeping those roots wet, it'll actually look like it's drying out, but it's the complete opposite, which is exactly why you need to And I keep saying, I've said it, this is my third time, and the reason I'm saying it is because it's very important. Stick your finger down in the soil and feel for moisture. If it's moist, don't water it.
And last but not least, when it comes to watering, water underneath the foliage if you can, and do not water on top at night, especially if it's hot and humid, because you set yourself up for diseases. As we go through the overnight hours, there's very little wind sometimes. You don't have the sun out, and the moisture lies around on the foliage a lot longer, and you'll start having some issues. So do your best to water underneath. We have to take another quick break. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard here at In and Around the House at B105. When we come back, the fun part, what plants? We're going to give you a lot of ideas. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we've been covering a lot of ground this morning. And also, we would certainly like to hear some of your thoughts and ideas about your containers, things that have worked well for you, plants that have been some of your favorites, because we're going to tell you about some of our favorites as we get into this discussion in the next half hour. And also, if you have any questions and you want to share some things with us, you can certainly do that. And you can do that on our Facebook page, or you can also send us an email to in and around the house at b105.com. And also, if you want to catch a past show, Alex does a great job keeping up with our podcast. You can certainly do that and listen to it at your leisure. And we're going to get right into the fun stuff right here when we talk about container gardening.
That sounds great. I was looking forward to this show, because we talked about this for a while, that we wanted to talk about annuals, because this is go time. This is annual time.
That it is. And it's about plant selections. And there's kind of a technique and approach to putting together your window boxes, your combination planters, and so forth. And I wish that I would have been the one who had coined this, and I can't take credit for it, but whoever did a great job of kind of explaining it in a really easy-to-understand fashion. And that is, you need a thriller, you need a filler, and then you need spillers. And for me, what is it about the thriller that is important to you?
Well, first of all, let's explain to our listeners who may not understand what a thriller is.
Well, that's
it's not Michael Jackson.
No, it's not.
It's definitely, I mean, I can dance for you if you want me to, but we're not talking about that. The thriller is what in the container, Tony?
It's the centerpiece,
there
in my opinion, and it is the plant that will grab your attention, something big, something bold, something beautiful, and are usually taller. And they are the plant that stands out and says, hey, look at me, and that's what I build upon.
And it may be your centerpiece right in the center of the container. If your container's up against the wall, it may be the back part and the backdrop. You know, the thriller can go in multiple places. It may be, if you like your containers a little more abstract, it can be off to a side a little bit. It doesn't have to be dead center middle every time. And I know you're probably looking at me like, what?
No.
It doesn't have to be dead center or middle, but the thriller is that one piece that you walk up to and it really catches. It's usually one of the things that catches your eyes first.
Kind of like you in the center of a pot.
Yeah, just like me.
It's all about Bob.
That's right. It's just like me.
So give me one of your favorite thrillers.
Well, it depends on the container. So are we going to talk a large container? Are we talking a smaller, like a 18-inch?
Well, give me one for a large and give me one for a 12, 14-inch.
Okay,
give me one for something that maybe it's 24
Let's go
inches
big.
Or
let's
bigger.
Go bigger. Let's go with a bigger container. I would love to use a tropical, you know, like a lantana tree.
Okay.
That would be something that I would like, especially because it's big, it's got a stem, so it's going to kind of give me some layering effects as opposed to everything just being all in one spot. It'll give me multiple heights in my container, which I think is key.
Okay.
In a smaller container, it's always been one of my favorites, is the Angelonia. I like to use that in a smaller container as my thriller, but it's not going to be quite as high, but it still gives me that layering effect. And it gives me, here it goes, Tony, your favorite word that I use, the verticality in a container.
You know what? We
You looked that up. It's a word.
I called him out on that one. And it was in a dictionary, and yes. And you have to bring that up.
I did. I had to.
It's all good.
I had to dig deep. You dug on me twice today. So
I did.
Yeah.
I'm just. Yeah.
But I love Angelonia and I love Lantana. Those are for two different size containers, but those two would actually for me be a good. And there's so many out there, but that would be a good thriller.
Mm-hmm.
So what about you?
For a large pot?
Large pot.
Couple go-tos that I think are big-time standouts. You can't go wrong with the Canna.
Yes, it's beautiful. Ooh. Big leaves, lots and lots of color.
Yeah, just gives you nothing but performance, and mm-hmm. they love sun. When Alex puts our container that I had on the deck last year up on our Facebook page,
it's up.
You'll see one of my favorites, and that is Prince Tut.
I was going to go with Papyrus. That. I love
Papyrus. Look at that one. And you know what?
Just got posted.
There were like two or three praying mantis that would hang out on the Papyrus last year.
Yes.
A cool, cool plant. And if you really want to get bold and you really want to go for the gold, King Tut will rock your world.
Yes. King Tut is a gorgeous plant. I love those as fillers. Baby Tut is another kind of grass. Any of your ornamental grasses can make a thriller.
Mm-hmm. Use the right size grass for the right size pot.
Exactly. Because if you have a 4-foot pot, you know, you have a huge container, you can use a bigger grass in there and it would make a great thriller.
What about, I'm still a fan of the quarter lines.
Quarter lines, wonderful.
Those just give you a different color than the old green spike, which, mm-hmm. I do like the green spike. Don't get me wrong. My Aunt Bonnie, this is her planting every year. Green spike, red geraniums, and the vinca vine that cascades over the side.
Yep.
And I'm like, Aunt Bonnie, I have to kind of shake her a little bit. Venture mm-hmm. out.
Come on, get something different.
I love the teaser, but she just likes that old-fashioned look.
Well, and some of those old-fashioned looks are just gorgeous planters.
Yeah.
I mean, so, they really are.
The Pinnacetum rubrum, which a lot of people like, mm-hmm. That's been a favorite for being a thriller in some pots.
That's your annual red grass. Kind of gets that plume late summer. So that, especially depending on your color schemes, can really be a great thriller.
You know, have you ever used the grass called Vertigo? Have you ever seen that? How, like, dark and rich the color is. It's like a burgundy.
It's almost really black.
It's like a burgundy black.
Yeah, it's dark.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. So that's I like that too, but that has to go into a big pot. That could really look good in the landscape bed just by itself. But
it another thriller that, depending on the size of your pot, we did some for a local church. We did it was a 48-inch pot, so 48-inch tall, 48-inch across, huge container. We did banana trees.
Yes, that works. And even your hibiscus tree forms mm-hmm. or the shrub forms. What Bob and I are talking about, if you're just joining us, welcome. We're talking about container gardening. We're talking about the various elements and styles of putting together your container gardens. And we're on the topic of thrillers. And, these are the things that take center stage in your pots. They show off. They say, hey, look at me. They're big. They're bold. And they just rock. And they are the first thing that should capture someone's attention when we start putting these together. We have to take another quick break, and when we come out of the break, we're going to continue this discussion about containers. And we would love to hear some of your combinations. Feel free to share those with us. We're not going to bite your head off, because it's your artwork. When we talk about containers, it's your canvas, and this is what makes planting things in a spring fun. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about fillers next. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we're talking about container gardening this morning. And we still have another hour and a half of the program left ahead of us, and we're going to hit it hard. And we just were mentioning the thrillers. That's one of the elements of putting together your containers, and we're going to take it to the next level down, and we're going to talk about fillers. And fillers are those type of plants that kind of complement or show off or even make the thriller look even better. What do you think about that, Bob?
I agree. And, let's go with our what plant am I. That's a good filler. And why is it a good filler? Because of the size. It's not the focal point. The fillers are not the focal point. They're the something that accents.
That they do, they'll surround and kind of complement the thriller. They don't necessarily have to be blooming type of plants. They could be plants that have some interesting texture, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe mounded in growth habit. And, just as the name applies, They just kind of fill in and accent the thriller. And they also kind of, you know, have another role of accenting the spillers when we get to that point.
They do. And fillers may have flowers. They may just be foliages. The key, though, is to make sure when you're creating any of these containers and you're doing the thrillers, fillers, and spillers, is if you're using one for sun, then the whole container has to be thrillers, fillers, and spillers for sun.
For sun. So you need to know, and that's why you go to your local garden center and nursery. That's where you're going to get the best advice. You're going to get the best plant. And you're going to know what works well with what, and you're going to be successful. So
I agree.
That's you.
So what fillers do you really like?
Well, you know, this one here that my wife put together that was on our deck, that's on our Facebook page. One of my favorites is, hands down, you can't beat this one. And it's a zinnia, and it's the one in the Profusion series. And they're kind of mounding in habit. They're prolific bloomers. They don't like to stay wet, and they will give you their A game all summer long. Look
absolutely.
At that.
Absolutely.
That's Profusion zinnia, and that's the orange.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, we go back, you know, one of my thrillers just a moment ago was Anchelonia. If you have a large container where maybe your centerpiece is a canna or something larger, then the Anchelonia actually can become the filler because it's a medium size. So that's where it's key to know what size container you have and what kind of planting arrangement you're trying to develop, because you can use some of these plants as the thriller, and then some of them also become the filler depending on how big the container is.
You know, you were mentioning using something tree form as a thriller in a large container. Doing something of the sort leads me to one of my other favorite fillers when you're doing something large, and those are the salvias, black and bloom, or black and blue, either one. They're very similar, except for the foliage is a little different. Hummingbird attractors, I'm telling you, you'll be amazed when you use black and blue salvia how often the hummingbirds go to that. Even the rockin' fuchsia salvia. So I think those are excellent fillers with something large.
But you have to make sure that you've got the space for it. You just have to make sure
you've
got the
space. Well, I'm acting like we have the space for it.
Yeah,
you are. We have the space for it.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just acting is actually, you know.
It's better than doing.
That's sometimes it is.
Just act like it.
Just act like you know what you're doing.
Just act like it. So do you have any favorite fillers?
You know, it depends, once again, on the container. Sometimes the... and I just lost it. I just totally had a brain malfunction. So,
lantana.
Let me go back. Sorry, there it is. Yeah. The lantana I like as sometimes the filler because of the color, the pollination, everything that it offers. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, the lantanas with all the new color schemes out there that have multiple colors on each flower, you can really enhance a container and really get some nice color because they can spread out. Now, the key with that is you got to have a container big enough to handle it because they can get some size to them.
Got it. You know, what about some of the coleus, the sun coleus? You know, there's so many varieties now of coleus that they're awesome. And that leads me back to using plants more for their foliage and more for their color than the blooms, actually.
Yes.
So I think coleus serve a great purpose. And another favorite of mine, Persian shield.
Yep. We talked about that a few weeks ago. What a great filler. What a great foliage. Got that nice purple with a little bit of green on it.
It's got really that silver in it, too.
Yeah, the silver. It's just gorgeous. I have a question for you.
Have you ever... You always want to put me on the spot.
I do. And I never prepare you for it. I always surprise you with questions. What about using some perennials as fillers?
I'm in. And I'll tell you one that comes to mind right off the bat. Are the selection today with the heuchera, coral bells, I think are great fillers because it's, again, I'm going back to the foliage. You know, there's various types. One of my favorite one is called silver gumdrop.
Yes.
Love the foliage of that particular heuchera. So, there are some perennials that fit the bill.
Absolutely. You know, another one going back to the annual for fillers that most people think of as spiller But it makes a great filler if your spiller actually spills really hard.
Spiller, filler, thriller, say it.
You, I know.
I'm getting a little confused here. So, let's reset this for a moment and keep that thought. What Bob and I are talking about are the technical components and elements that we bring together to talk about putting together those beautiful pots, container pots.
So absolutely.
Say
so,
it real quick.
Thrillers, fillers, and spillers. But a different filler if your spiller is a good spiller. Now, that's a little confusing. But your filler can use like a Bordeaux petunia, more of the mounding petunia. But in order to do that, you have to have make sure your spiller actually is one that really cascades
really
hard.
Cascades over.
So you might throw like a sweet potato vine, something that's going to really fall hard and be a spiller, and then throw the Bordeaux in with it.
Bordeaux. We'll talk about it when we come back out. We have to take another quick break. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard here at In and Around the House at B105. 749-B105. Give us a shout. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we're talking about container plants today. And if you're just joining us and you've taken us into the room there with you and just taking in some of these plants we're talking about for our containers, welcome. And if you look outside, it's a little misty, it's gloomy, it's everything. It's yep. going to be like that probably, Bob.
Most of the day.
For the most part of the day.
And so, I want to remind people that, you know, those who are listening to us, maybe they're happen to get out of their car and maybe they feel like, oh, I want to catch what else we're going to talk about since we're getting ready to talk about spillers. You can download the B105 app and listen to us live through that. So they can still catch the show while they're going into work or if they're going to watch a sporting event. They can still listen to us for all 3 hours because it is the most exciting 3 hours on radio.
That's right. Every Saturday morning, it's the best 3 hours.
That's right.
And while we were in a break, we just got a hold of our good friend up at Lakeview Nursery, Jim Montag. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Just delightful.
I bet you are. So how's it going this spring?
Sunshine in here.
Liquid sunshine. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Little yeah. liquid sunshine. So how's the spring been thus far for you guys? You staying busy?
Yeah, real busy. Wet, but, you know, dries it out.
That's right. You just do what you can do when it's like this.
Gets people frustrated because they can't get things done.
Nah, there'll be plenty of time, though. There'll be plenty of time. Sun will come out soon.
Jim, yeah. we're talking this morning about mixed containers, you know, putting annual combinations together, sometimes with various tropicals. You know, the old fashion, you know, when we talk about thrillers, fillers, and spillers. And I just mm-hmm. wanted to reach out to you and ask you this morning, do you have any favorites that you like to put together or see in combinations?
I like Calipacopa. I like Million Bells.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm brain dead this morning.
Oh, I like to catch
you off
guard.
It's too early for Jim, isn't it?
I've been here since 4:30.
Oh, man.
It's the only time I get to do anything.
We understand that.
I don't know. I like old geraniums.
I'm going
back old school.
You know what?
Performs.
I do like some of the geraniums. You know, are you familiar with some of those, the brocade series, where you don't get a lot of maybe top performance from the blooms, but you get some really cool color with the foliage? You know, what's that one called? Vancouver Centennial?
Something like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's got that lime green or chartreuse color to the leaf with some dark shades in it.
I use a lot of petunias. I just did my big basket. I use a 64-inch tree basket and make a hanging basket out of it.
Oh, yeah, that's that one. You put the waves in there, don't you?
Well, this is the hanging basket, not the umbrella.
Oh, not the umbrella. Okay.
No, that's the 8-foot one.
But what about that bubble gum?
5 baskets.
Wow. You know,
that's
pretty
cool.
Do you use bubble gum a lot?
Yep, that's what we use in the umbrella.
And that's a petunia that we're talking about. It's crazy.
Jim, I'm going to switch topics on you just a second because I do this to Tony all the time. Is there a specific fertilizer for the annuals that you really like or would recommend to our listeners?
I use Osmocote, regular nursery Osmocote, and I also use a lot of Start and Grow.
Yeah, there you go. Couldn't go wrong.
Like our umbrella, I put 30 pounds on our umbrella. I mix it in the soil. and I never touch it the rest of the year.
And it's gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It is cool. That the umbrella is really cool. You know what? You need to send us a photograph of that so we can put it on Facebook.
Now or like when it's planted?
You know, maybe one from last year or the year before. Yeah, or you can do it later.
Or when it gets big, you can send it to us. We want to see it.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, that it is. Well, Jim,
that was one of John's crazy ideas.
That's a good idea, that's for sure. But we just want to, I said that's a great idea, but we just want to reach out to you, say hello, see how you're doing, and just get your spin on some of the container ideas.
Yeah, a lot of neat plants to use, you know, and just color.
That's what makes it work. Well, stay in touch with us. We'll have to have you in the studio some morning. I want to talk conifers. You're the conifer guru, and you got all that different stuff up here at Lakeview Nursery. So,
12 months of color, man.
12 months of color, and I want to. I can always stand to learn from you about conifers because I have to say you're the most versed that I know of in the tri-state area when it comes to conifers.
Yeah, I know. I know collectors that make me look stupid.
Well, no, don't say that. You and Darlene Cooper are really on your game with the conifers, so
yeah.
I have a great deal of respect for that. Well, have a great weekend, and stay in touch with us, and we'll reach out and have you in sometime.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
All right, Jim. Take care.
Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Yep. Yeah.
Always, never a dull day.
No, because he can get you laughing so hard, yeah. But I just want to reach out. And maybe we need to do that a little more often. We need to just call somebody that is one of our local leaders that advertises with us here at In and Around the House and just catch them at the moment, see
Absolutely.
What's going on. So we're going to go back to the topic here, Bob and I, from In and Around the House, and we're talking about container gardening and spillers. You have any favorites?
Let's review. You know, we've got our thriller. For those who are just tuning in, the thriller is the focal point. It's the centerpiece of the container. Not necessarily meaning it has to be in the center, but it's the main focal point. Then there's the filler, which was what we just discussed, and those are the ones that are kind of the mid-level, could be foliages, could have a little color, but it's also to accent the thriller as well. Then we get into the spillers, and these are the ones that are, hence the name, spilling, because they're going to be falling out of the containers.
And
there are some favorites, but what are some of yours?
Well, when it comes to the spillers, I know, and when I do mixed containers, I put the stuff in there because if I ever lose something, you'll never notice.
Mm-hmm.
So I pack it, and there's always room to tuck something in somewhere. That's how I look at it. And the spillers, you know, they're the things that kind of just go out over the edge of the pot and drape down.
Mm-hmm.
And the main purpose, in my opinion, of the spiller, like I said, is just to drape over the side and soften its edges.
Absolutely. Is there a particular one you love?
Well, yeah, I like some of the licorice plants,
mm-hmm.
The lime green in particular, but it doesn't really spill out. It kind of just billows out. And I also like some of the trailing coleus.
Yep, they're beautiful.
You can see that in the container that we have here on Facebook. The trailing coleus have a great look about them, and I don't always necessarily want something to go straight down the pot. I want it to billow out. I want it to come at you.
Yes.
I want it to look like it's got depth. Or, you know, there's that 3D element to it. You can just kind of distinguish
it's not just flat as it falls out, is what you're saying. So some of the ones that I love, and Jim had mentioned the Calibrachoa. I love Calis. I just love how they fall. Some of them, if mixed with the right color, they're absolutely beautiful. You can't go wrong with sweet potato vine. Just make sure you know that gets big.
I think you can. And
how can you go wrong? Other than overplanting.
When you use marguerite, the sweet potato vine, you go down the street and you see it in a pot, it's like, that's all you see.
Well, then that pot was not done right.
Okay.
Wait
a minute. Hold on.
Okay.
Let's talk about some of these sweet potato vines that are not as aggressive, maybe like the Solar Power series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you can always trim it as well. So don't forget, just because it's in there, you can always trim it.
All right. You can trim it. You can get a haircut.
So I'm going to hold on to it.
Because Alex is over there waving us on. We got to take another quick break. And come on, hang in there with us this morning and participate. I know you have interesting container combinations to share with us. 749-B105 in and around the house. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works alongside here with my partner Bob Bard, and we're talking about container gardening and annuals and putting together some wonderful combinations that will be striking and conversation pieces for you when your family and friends come over and they say, hey, where did you get that? And you can say, hey, I got that at my local garden center. Well, that's what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Or just think about it. If you could get to your local garden center and create your own pot today, you could have it ready for mom by next week. And not only did you just go get her something, but you took the time to pick something out and pick out flowers and make an arrangement. I'm telling you, it's gonna make her really happy.
And if you forget mom, Bob and I are going to pay you a visit. You're not going to like it. So don't forget mom next week. It's a big weekend next week. So we're talking about, you know, we talked about our thrillers and our containers, which is the plant that says, hey, look at me. I'm the one that I'm running the show, so to speak. I'm big, I'm bold, I'm exciting. And we talked about the fillers, how they complement the thriller. Now we're in the spillers, things that drape over the side. What are some of your favorites?
Well, I mentioned the Calibrico. I love that. You know, one that we had as plant of the week, or what plant am I, a few weeks ago, Mizzou.
Yes.
You know, and I encourage people to go back on the Facebook and find that one. What, it's kind of a succulent variegated foliage, gets that nice little flower on it as it warms up here. It doesn't over trail, so it's not going to take over the planter, but it really is a good one because it's a full, thick spiller. You know, it stays pretty dense.
I have two that's, you know, I think are standouts and something you need to look for and ask for when you're in a garden center. One of those is Lysimachia, a.k.a. Creeping Jenny. You got that lime chartreuse color to it, and it drapes out very nicely. It's very graceful. But yet another one of my favorites is Wirevine.
Yeah.
Eulenbeckia, Wirevine. Look for that one at your local garden centers. That's a very interesting piece right there.
There is some just some stunning spillers. I mean, you just can't go wrong, but there's things that are, you know, Bacopa. If you got a shade one, the Bacopa is white, little white flowers, not a massive trail, kind of like, it is a spiller. It'll spill over the edge. It's not going to take over the plant and go down like a sweet potato vine. But if you need something for a little darker spot, that's a great one.
Do you really like Bacopa?
I like it as an accent. I don't like it as the main.
I do too, but I have a problem with it, and I'll tell you that in a second. But before we do that, we have Jerry with us on the line. Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Hey, good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. What's going on? What's
the question?
Yeah.
We had a roof put on our house, and we had real big, bold hibiscus out front.
Uh-huh.
They got mashed down. So we cut them back. Will that hurt them?
Are these the hardy versions?
The big red ones.
Yeah. When did all this happen and take place? Last year?
Just recently, like 2 months ago, about a month or so ago.
Oh, well, they shouldn't. They should be okay because actually they're herbaceous, so they die back to the ground completely. I would doubt. Has it started to push new growth?
No, when we snipped them back, because I mean, like I said, they mashed down pretty good.
Yeah, no, but you're not seeing any new growth or any new activity as of yet, are you?
No, they're just like a real dark tan color. Like
so it's like the stems from last year's growth.
Right.
Oh, you're fine. Because the hardy hibiscus, and what Jerry's talking about, it's a beautiful specimen. It has this really large dinner plate kind of size blooms on them. And Jerry, I think you're fine because what was probably more than likely damaged was last year's stuff, because you should cut those back every year as you start seeing that new growth come up. You cut out the old. So I think you're golden. I think you're all right. You don't have to worry about anything. What do you think, Bob?
No, I agree with you. I think he should be fine. Just sit tight, let it warm up.
Hummingbirds, that's what we plan them.
Yeah. Jerry, I think you're fine, brother. So don't sweat that one. You know, that's minor.
Because I didn't know if I should dig them up, put new ones in.
No, that's a resilient plant. It hasn't even pushed any growth at this point, I wouldn't seem to think, because it's a later one.
When is a good time to start planting, like, fall bulbs when they come out?
September and October. Late September, October, when you see the fall bulbs.
when they normally come out. I mean,
about that time. Oh, you mean like if you planted them last fall?
No, if you plant them this year.
Oh, it's going to be it'll be the fall. Now you can get out to your local garden centers and plant some summer bulbs. You know, some of the lilies, the gladiola, stuff like that. Maybe some of the alocasias, calocasias, the elephant ears. You know, dahlias, the dinner plate dahlias. Stunning. Those are fun to grow, too. But you'll have to remember, you need to lift those at the end of the season.
Right.
But those are summer bulbs. The fall bulbs, we don't typically get those in until, like, September.
Okay.
All right?
All righty. Thanks, guys.
All right, Jerry. Have a good weekend.
Too. Bye.
So, you know, that's a great question. And a lot of times, now, you know what? He said they had a new roof put on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say this. My good friend, Tim Mallory, owner of Advantage Roofing, they do such an impeccable job. You don't have to worry about that kind of nonsense, silly stuff. They pay attention to detail. Advantage Roofing, they've done my roof. They've done a couple of my other friends' roof. And I'm not just saying this. They pay attention. They're not haphazard or lackadaisical about what it is that they're doing. They're very professional and they're very clean. And when they're done and they leave, you don't even know that they were there.
Absolutely.
They pick everything up. And that's nothing more aggravating when somebody is careless and they start damaging your landscaping material.
Oh, yeah. And because they, you know, somebody like Tim, they care.
Tim cares. Yep. So and especially with all this rain, I'm sure if you have any issues with your roof or your ridge vents or you name it, you're probably finding out that you need to replace your roof or have somebody look at it. Give Advantage Roofing a call and ask for Tim Mallory.
Absolutely.
But, Jerry just brought up a good point. Sometimes people don't care about your stuff and they just let it go. That's not good.
They do.
I would be upset. I would be totally upset.
So we were still talking about some spillers.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other ones that you really, really like?
What I want to touch base on, you mentioned Bacopa.
Yep. And remember that I said that could be in some shade, but it also can take sun.
Well, I like things that bloom, you know, that are white. Mm-hmm. You know, Gulliver's White is one of the Bacopas. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I think it can look a little out of place, undone, because when those blooms start to fade and they stay brown,
mm-hmm.
unless you're really getting them off of there, they'll linger on. And it just, I think sometimes it could look really good or it can be a little bit of an eyesore.
It can be. That's and
I like the blue one better.
Yeah, and you just got to know that what you're getting, and just some of the options out there. Because I mean, if we go even back to some fillers, you know, a plant I like, and my wife sometimes disagrees with me. She likes them, but I don't think she loves them.
She disagrees with you a lot.
Well, that's true.
Than
she does
more than you think.
Probably for good reason. But you know, I love the some of the different begonias. The dragon wing begonias. I like the dragon wing begonia. I think it's a great plant.
It's a wonderful plant. I think it. You know, it. A lot of times, if you're willing to put up with a lot of the flowers dropping,
mm-hmm.
I think it does that.
It does
more often, more so than some other blooming annuals. It's self cleaning, so to speak, because that's a testimonial in itself. I mean.
But it'll grow, and it says of sun to shade,
right?
And it'll definitely grow in shade.
Oh, absolutely.
I've had total success in a lot of shade with
and the
that.
Foliage stays darker. Uh-huh.
It's a different, it's a bigger annual, so you got to have some space for it. But it could be a filler, it could be a thriller, depending on your container. But I can't go wrong with the dragonwing begonias. I just think that's a good one. Another filler, and we mentioned early in the show, I think a good filler is that tattoo series of the vinca because of the shape a little bit more. And I love some of the trailing vinca
mm-hmm.
for a spiller, but, you know, I like to use those, too.
I'm going to throw one your way. Lobularia Frosty Night.
Oh, okay.
That's
you're digging.
That's a
bad look at you digging.
Oscar right there. Like that. I like that variegated look. You know, you get those white blooms, you know, it drops a little bit of the white blooms, but that's okay. But the foliage for me is striking.
Absolutely.
I like it.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'm going to give you a little. I want you, because we had a question on Facebook from Tommy. She has a 4-foot flower box facing west, full sun. So I want you to think about that. When we come out of the break, I'm going to ask you
what's
to help me
it?
Create a 4-foot flower box facing west for Tommy. You're listening to In and Around the House with Tony Works and Bob Bard. We will be right back.
Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we've covered a lot of ground this morning. We still have a lot of things to still talk more about. And if you're just getting up, it looks like we're going to see most of this throughout the day. It's a little foggy, a little misty. I kind of felt like that this morning because I was hanging out with some good old boys last night down at the Yard House, and I usually don't do that on a Friday night. Couple of Guinness and some good time spent with a friend of mine, Chuck Bricky, who just retired. I just want to say happy retirement to you, Chuck. And seeing the gang took me back to the old days at the 580 building there on 6th Street.
That's cool. And I'm good still guys. Proud of you. You still were in bed at an early time by 9:30. So way to go.
Roughly 9. I was home 9-ish. And Tina's like, you better go to bed.
All right. So before we went into the break, we had Tommy on Facebook, and she has a 4-foot flower box facing west, so getting full sun in the afternoon. So let's talk about 4-foot length. Let's talk about planting. How would you recommend her to make that arrangement?
Well, I would start this out, you know, real quick to kind of cover our bases and what we've been talking about for most of the last hour. You know, having a good foundation, good drainage, provide for that, a good soil. So we need that foundation. And I would start off probably in that 4-foot window box. I would probably start off with a nice thriller, something in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that would probably be a cordyline.
Oh, red, there you go.
Red sensation.
There you go.
Let's start with that.
That'd be
so
pretty.
I think I would put that in the center. Probably in front of that, I would put diamond frost. Something low that's going to billow out in front of that cordyline.
That'd be nice.
Then I would flank the cordyline with Angelonia.
Okay.
Okay.
Now you kind of mixing those three pretty tight. Or are we spacing that out pretty good?
I'm staying close together.
I how want close? Them, like 6 inches?
I want them chummy. I want them rubbing elbows.
To start with?
Oh, yeah.
So we're planting heavy.
I give them a little bit of room.
Okay.
You know, but I want them to get along with each other. I want them to, you know, when you're on an airplane and that big guy sitting next to you,
yeah,
you know, you're just like, I wish you'd move your arm off my armrest.
You're that close.
I make it happen.
Okay.
I told you, I fill them up because if you lose something, you don't know.
You don't worry about it.
You don't worry about it.
Correct.
I kind of come out. I'll probably use, I would use.
Wait a minute. You said Angelonia.
Uh-huh.
You going like the purple? Are you going with the white, lavender?
I would probably go with Wedgwood, the new Wedgwood blue, the newer one. It's got the white in it with the blue.
Yes, so you got the two colors.
Uh-huh.
Kind of bi-color. Because that kind of pulls off the Diamond Frost Euphorbia.
Yep.
Right? So there you go.
So I would...
Is that right, Diamond Frost? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I make sure I got it right. I think
Diamond Frost, it's a great performer. Gives you that white bloom. It has texture about it too, Bob. So you can't go wrong with Diamond Frost, and those people who have used it in the past know what I'm talking about. But, you know, I would come on out a little bit and, you know, I, something we've not talked about that I wouldn't be hesitant to use in there too, Pentas.
Oh, I forgot about Pentas. Yeah. That's
you know, they can be quite striking in that box. And these things we're talking about, Tommy, will certainly take heat amongst other things. These aren't your only choices. These are just some things we're going to throw your way. And then, you know, I'd probably throw in front of the, you know, the Angelonia, just a little in front of it to the side, towards the front of the window box, maybe some Million Bells, the Calibrachoas.
There you go.
Okay. Something that's going to complement.
It's going to kind of fill and or kind of spill.
Exactly.
Because it'll give you both.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have to find something chartreuse. And I know a lot of people like to use potato vine. If you don't have the means to reach these boxes, if they're relatively up high, marguerite would not be my go-to because it gets crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bob said, trim it up, give it a haircut. You know, I would go with something that's a little less aggressive. You know, use the something in the Solar Power series, or I think the Illusion series that was a little less aggressive. So that gives you a little bit more of a draping look coming over the front. And, you know, I wouldn't be hesitant to use the bubblegum Vista Petunia either.
There you go. That'd be a lot of color, wouldn't it?
it would be bold and striking.
So you're talking 7 to 9 plants, or are you going even heavier than that?
With a 4-foot box, I'd fill it up.
So you're thinking more like 15.
I can't tell you what I'm thinking. I fill them up.
I just got you all excited. You're standing up out of your chair. You're creating.
I'm ready to come over there.
Absolutely.
I'd fill them up.
I agree.
What do you think? You know, there's all kinds of stuff that you can use.
Well, you know, I think all those are great ideas. But let's talk about maybe you don't want a thriller, spiller, and a filler. Is that possible? Is that something you should do?
Okay, then you could say, hey, I'm going to stick with one type of planting.
Yes.
So let's take the dragon wing begonia and just load it up with dragon wings.
Mm-hmm.
And use maybe some Boston ivy, or not Boston ivy, some English ivy to come out over the front.
Just something simple like
that. Something simple.
You could do something simple. It doesn't always have to be, if you like a simpler design, it's okay to have a simple design. So if you have a container and you want to use 3 colors of Calibrachoa, that's okay. That could be a beautiful display of color if done right and it's all put together in the right in the right color schemes.
You know, I'm all about monochromatic looks too. And when I say that, using various shades of things that are orange in color, or you know, something else that would look good in that box is, I'm thinking of it, crotons.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I might do a croton in there just because the tropical, put 3, kind of bookend them a little bit.
What else would you add in? You know what would give a good texture? Mm-hmm. Asparagus fern around that croton or the crotons.
Yeah, it's full sun, so you just got to make sure you're using stuff for full sun.
Right.
But, you know,
fern will take it.
That would definitely do it. That would definitely do it. But, you know, if I'm going to a monochromatic, I think you could mix 3 colors of Calis. You could throw even a red, a purple, and a white together.
Well, that's not monochromatic. That's contrasting.
So, I'm sorry. I'm messing up today.
You're doing all right. So, no, you told me to tell you.
I did. But, you know, let's say we want to mix 3 colors of the same flower. I love it.
Nothing wrong with that.
You know, like I said, maybe you use a yellow, a purple, and a red, or, you know, a white, purple, and a red. You know, you can mix these colors together and just have that all in the same container, and that's okay.
You know, something that's really interesting too that we haven't kind of talked about or discussed, and I think it's a plant too that when it first came out, you couldn't get enough of them to sell to the public, and now it's kind of one of those forgotten plants. Fiber optic grass. You know, there's something about that I like.
It's a good, for a small container, a good thriller. It's very interesting. In the right container, it's also a good filler.
Okay. You would call that a thriller in some situations.
If you put it in the centerpiece of a hanging basket, yeah. If you put it, you know, mixed, it could also be a filler because it just gives you some interest. I like Juncus.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
You know, it looks like a little kind of stiff ornamental grass that curls. So really a unique plant there. I like that foliage. I think that's kind of a cool plant to have in there as well, maybe as a hanging basket centerpiece.
Or Blue Mohawk is a good one. Is there another one called Blue Arrows? I'm trying to remember. Kind of more of a straight up.
It's the vertical one.
Yeah, it's vertical.
Yeah.
But you know, those are cool. They had a lot of interest in Pisaeus.
Is there any other flower that you think maybe isn't used as much that you really like that you haven't touched on?
There's one that I really like, and my wife can grow it, and she does a great job with it because she stays up with it. But we really have not talked about verbena.
Yes.
Verbena is a cool plant. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And Tommy, I hope we helped you with some ideas with your window box. And we'll conclude the container gardening items when we come back out of this quick break. And then we're going to turn it to our plant of the week, which is the lilac. And you should start seeing those blooming right now or momentarily. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And we're going to quickly sum up the container combinations and so forth. We have spent quite a bit of time on containers this morning, and that's because that's one of the most popular things that you can do. Most people, they really get into the container gardening scheme of things, And I get excited because you got to contain yourself, so to speak, Bob. When you
my
do
wife
containers.
Goes crazy. She loves doing this. You know, each she'll do every year, she'll do like a container of yellow, a container of pink, and they're all these different flowers. And by the time summer comes around and I'm just getting a little time to relax out in the backyard, just sit there and just enjoy the beauty.
You know what I figured out about you is that you are the thriller around your household and around the business because you have good supporting cast members around you.
Absolutely.
That's Elizabeth. And I don't know if I want to say she's your filler or spiller, because I don't know where Doug comes into play, because I know you're
it's
always
just different parts. Everybody's back hurts around me.
Yeah, that's what I'm
just
hearing.
Just like you, your back sore right now.
That's
isn't
what.
It?
Yeah, it's all
you're just carrying me everywhere.
Shoulders too. But you know, before we went into the break, you had asked me about another blooming type of plant, and my wife does a great job with them, and they can be a little finicky, and that's the verbena.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's so many different colors to choose from, and I like that layering effect, that billowing effect, that how they come out of a basket or out of a container. But if you let them get too dry, which they do want to be on
the dry side,
you could lose some of the bloom buds, but they respond favorably. You just give them a haircut, but you certainly don't want to keep them too wet because they'll let you know.
Remember earlier in the show when you mentioned about not watering the foliage if you can help it? I think verbena is one where if you can keep the extra water off of it, especially watering at nighttime, you'll have much better success as well.
I agree. Yeah, so. It's just watering is very, very, very important.
So what do you think if I threw, just a container of, it's a shadier container, and I want to throw maybe just mix three different coleus. How would you feel about something like that?
I like that. You know, I would probably think about the big leafed Kong, K-O-N-G coleus. They're stunning. You know, they get quite large, so you need to have the right size container for those. And I forgot one day I was out on a delivery at someone's house, and they had a beautiful bed of Kong coleus under their deck, and it was shady, you know, and it was gorgeous. It almost looked like a solid ground cover.
Absolutely.
It was beautiful.
You know, another one I just want to mention, the gazania.
You know, there's something about that plant that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. The colors are rich and they're bold.
Really makes it neat if you mix three or four different colors in a container. I think really looks pretty. Really, really a nice one.
Really looks pretty.
It looks good.
Stunning or awesome pretty?
What's wrong with pretty?
Looks pretty.
What's wrong with pretty?
I'm just kidding you. So, yeah.
You're a 25-footer.
Yeah. I like
you
the,
look
I like
pretty
the
from 25
yeah,
feet away.
I got you.
Just kidding.
No, I'm okay with that. I have rhino skin. I can take it.
But there are so many great annuals, and we will be talking more and more about them, especially next week. We'll probably bring up some more because it's Mother's Day. But we definitely want to encourage our listeners to get out, pick some up, create mom's basket starting today. That way you can really take a cool container, maybe a window planter, a deck rail planter. Get something now, so especially if you're going to create it yourself, you got time for it to get even a week of established.
Yeah, don't wait till the last minute. Don't put that off.
Selection's good. Go get mom. She's worth it.
Next week's a big weekend, that's for sure. You know, something else I wanted to mention about plants, one of my favorites, is Euvolvulus. Blew my mind. That's a good one. And I like that.
That was like that jet commercial, you know, where the mind pops and the stuff blows out the top. You ever seen that? Never mind. Okay.
No, I can't say that.
Some people listening know what I'm talking about. Just blew your mind.
Just blew your mind.
Uh-huh.
But that the blue bloom on that is awesome, and it closes up at night.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Portulaca?
Portulaca is another one that closes up.
Yeah.
You know, just, and then they just open up slowly and beautifully.
Really, really a cool plant. So. But, you know, there's a lot of thrillers and spillers, maybe more information than you needed. But, you know, there's a lot of great annuals out there, and we encourage you to get to your independent garden center and look for those.
Oh, you know, and I'm just looking here, like lemon ball sedum. I can just
we
go
need
on
to
and
move on,
on
Tony. We need to move on. Our listeners have heard of
lemon slice Cali.
So, but we do have our plant of the week.
And as a matter of fact, and we have a Facebook question with this particular plant. And like we said before we went into the break, you're starting to see them come into their own and give us those wonderful lavender purplish blooms. And they're very, very fragrant. And that's the lilac.
And, you know, the old-fashioned common lilacs, the dwarf Korean lilacs. You know, there's a lot out there. Now, I really like some of the dwarfs. Now, when we say dwarf, that doesn't mean small.
Right.
That just means smaller than the big ones.
Right, in comparison to the common.
Right. So you're going to get something, you know, 4 to 6 feet tall. It is easy to trim, but the dwarf Korean lilac is just a wonderful plant, would make a great gift for mom. She can put it anywhere there's at least 4 hours or more of sunlight, and they will do really, really well.
You can't forget the fragrance of the lilac. It relaxes you, in my opinion. It's comforting. When you pick up the fragrance of the lilac, it's like nothing else. Very, very pleasing.
Absolutely. I have some on the side of the garage. Have to do a little pruning. There's a holly I'm going to take out. I'm going to actually add more lilacs because on the southwest side of my house, it gets so much sun. They smell so good. Like when I open the garage and I'm pulling the car in, you can smell them all the way around the corner because it's just such a great fragrance.
You know, if you meet the requirements for a lilac and you kind of look after them and take care of them, they'll be one of the best jewels in your landscape. I mean, you'll look forward to them every year blooming. We used to have one before I did some rearranging that was right by our front window, the downstairs window.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was in full bloom, if you would just open up the window, it would litter the whole downstairs with that lilac fragrance.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
It was very nice. I had a good friend of mine, Natalie, but she had posted, and I wish she wouldn't have put what year I planted, but I planted a lilac for her. But it was all back in 1998, and she said she still loves the fragrance and the smell today. And that was really nice of her to compliment me and say how much she appreciates that. But, you know, the point is, that's a 21-year-old plant that's still continually blooming in her beds.
They're long-lived. It's a great plant. You know, we have to take another quick break, and the big question is, why doesn't my lilac bloom? We'll tell you why when we come back. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. And we're going to continue our conversation, Bob and I, about lilacs. And before we went into the break, Bob, I had mentioned probably one of the most common questions that is asked in the garden center is, you know, why aren't my lilacs blooming? And it could be a variety of reasons. You know, what comes to mind?
Two right away.
Foremost? Yeah.
First one, is it planted in enough sunlight? So I think that's key. These like it hot. You know, lilacs like it hot.
How much sun would you think?
I think 4 hours or more is great.
I agree. I would lean more towards six.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think four is the minimum.
Yeah.
But I mean, like the ones on the side of my truck or inside of my house, they get eight and they usually are incredible bloomers. So. Another thing is, when did you trim it? Did you trim it in the fall?
Bingo.
So if you trimmed it in the fall and then you were hoping for flowers this spring, you are going to be mighty disappointed.
You know, and that's a common mistake. I think people get a little antsy. It's not going to kill the plant or injure the plant or harm it in any way if you prune it at the wrong time. But what you're going to do is you're going to sacrifice some of those blooms just as you're talking about, you know, just... It's a little disappointing. It's like, hey, where are those blooms? Well, you cut them out last fall. And people feel a little antsy to just clean things up and trim things back. And my rule of thumb is, and most in the industry, is don't prune any of the spring blooming shrubs any later than July 4th.
On my lilacs, I like to trim when the bloom dies within 42 days or 6 weeks of when that bloom dies. And that's when I like to give mine a haircut. And you can usually give them a decent haircut. They're lilacs, they usually fill in fairly quickly. But if you'll trim them in that time frame, what I've found is that when the blooms are set for next year, they're all there. You're not blooming too late that you don't hurt the bloom for the next year.
You know, what about transplanting a lilac?
You
know, you may not see it bloom for 3 years or so. That's not uncommon.
Especially the common old-fashioned lilacs, when you move those, sometimes they take a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
The dwarf Korean and those varieties, I think, will rebloom a little bit better. But once again, when you transplant, depending on when you do it, sometimes I like to give them a haircut before I transplant. So let's say you did it in the fall because you're waiting for a frost, and then you give it a haircut, and then you move it. Well, there you cut off the blooms for the next flowering season, and you got to wait for it to really re-root. So it could be a couple years down the road mm-hmm. before you see that happen.
How far will you typically go into one when you prune it?
You know, with lilacs, I've intentionally cut them back really hard just to see what would happen. What about you?
You know, it depends. If it's one of the dwarf varieties, I won't go into it any more than a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then all of a sudden you're getting down into the older wood.
That's the part I like to stay out of.
And it depends on how old they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which leads me to some of the old-fashioned common lilacs, you know, rejuvenation pruning. That's another approach with those. And when I'm asked, like, hey, why isn't it blooming? It may not be as vigorous as it once was when it was younger.
Yeah.
So you go in there and sometimes we'll say, hey, use a fertilizer that might have a little bit more phosphorus in it.
So you get that root development.
So you can get some of those blooms cranking up, if at all possible, and make sure you're getting ample amount of sun. But when you rejuvenate an older lilac, you know, what I like to do is get into it, you know, like the one that's on Facebook that we just received.
Phil posted one, and he had a question about dead branches from the winter ice, and also, you know, when should he trim it to make sure he doesn't hurt his lilac.
Right. So, after it blooms is when you want to prune it.
Right.
But there's three D's to pruning, regardless of what's going on and what time of year that it is. Anything that's diseased, dead, or damaged, you prune it no matter what.
Right. So he said he had still some ice that he had, or maybe he already did that, but he had cut it out, which was good. You need to cut out the dead. And what he said was it's allowed some inner light to get down in there, so he's getting some new shoots, which mm-hmm. is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's quite big. That lilac is huge, and it's beautiful, by yeah. the way. But when you look down in the lower part of that lilac shrub, you know, when you're rejuvenating an older lilac, I like to get in there and I'll take out a third of the stems near the base.
Yeah. And you're thinning.
I'm thinning it out and I'm trying to get a third of the largest stems at that particular time. And this usually takes like a 2 or 3 year process. Then the second year, what you do, you'll get down there and take out another third of the bigger stems. Mm-hmm. And by that time you're opening it up and you should start seeing some new growth down low. And you're rejuvenating that lilac.
Absolutely. And with Phil on Facebook, just to reiterate, wait till those bloom die, wait till they're dead, and then go ahead and trim it out. If there's still any other dead branches in there left over from winter that are dead, there's no leaves on them, you can do those at any time. But I think the one that we're seeing on Facebook, the large lilac, I think that type of trimming you just explained, where you take probably a third of them out now, and then another third in a year, right. He could kind of get this thing a little bit under control if he wants to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not touching the house from the angle he took the picture. Maybe it is, but, you know, he's definitely left room for it to grow.
And sometimes, you know, when you're looking for that first third, you know, the number of branches you want to remove, look for some of those branches that are the least productive, you know, really not giving you anything or any foliage or any bloom. Start with those.
Absolutely.
But it's like a 2 or 3 year process, and then all of a sudden you'll have a new shrub, and you should be fine.
Yeah, I think Phil would be fine once with that pruning. Now, what do you think about the dwarf Korean lilac trees?
Love them. I love the lilac
trees. Now, because
tree.
They're a tree, are you trimming them any different?
Same way. Treat there them the go. Same way. Yeah. Now, what Bob's talking about is you can get a lilac in a tree form, and they're great performers, and you're starting to see a lot of the dark purple bloomerang on tree forms. Now, you and I have had this discussion about bloomerang.
I know.
Yesterday, I stopped at a nursery out in Alexandria and had a conversation with somebody about bloomerang. And I'm on the fence. I know that bloomerang in a shrub form, now, I know our peers are going to probably say, why is Tony and Bob talking about this?
Because we're telling the truth.
But it's our responsibility to kind of steer you in the right direction. But I think dark purple, the bloomerang lilac, from what I understand, is a lot more reliable than the original one.
The original bloomerang,
I was not impressed with.
I was not either. It did bloom a second time, but it was about 20% maybe of that original bloom. But I didn't think the hardiness was was there compared to some of the other lilacs.
I agree. I just think there was something about it, especially if the soil was wet. It just seemed to me as if it just couldn't make the winter.
Yeah.
Now, I'm speaking of the shrub form. I think dark purple bloomerang on a standard tree form, hands down, is a good performer from what I understand and what I hear. But I also like the dwarf Korean, the palibin. I know that that one's a true tried and tested, and it's given us a great deal of performance over the years. It's been very, very favorable. So I lean in that direction. And, I'm on the fence still. And if someone has ever purchased a bloomerang, I'd like to hear from you what you've experienced. You know, what were the winters like? How did they come out of that winter? Are you seeing that second go around of blooms? So share that with us if you have a bloomerang, because I'm really interested to hear. And we don't always get that kind of feedback in the garden center, but certainly you might be able to help us with some of that. And when we come back out of the break, Bob and I are going to talk about maybe some of our favorite lilacs that we want to share with you. And give us a call, 749-B105, In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard. And we've covered a lot of ground this morning. It's been a fast show. And if you're just getting up and joining us, sorry, you missed the best part in the 7 o'clock hour. It's all good stuff, but you missed the container gardening part of it. But you can catch it on a podcast. That's my point there.
Go to the B105 page, go to our Facebook page, go to the B105 app. You can hit it all and you can still catch the best 3 hours in radio.
That's right. I agree with you.
So
we were talking about lilacs and a little bit of pruning lilacs and so forth. Why don't they bloom sometimes? So we've covered those issues. What about some of our favorites? You have anything that sticks out?
Well, I've already mentioned it three times, so I've got to stick with it. But I love the dwarf Korean lilac. I just love it. I think it'd be a great gift for mom. It gets a good size, but it's containable. You can keep it trimmed. It's a consistent bloomer. It is a profuse bloomer. It is disease resistant. It is bug resistant. It is powdery mildew resistant. All the things I love, and I don't care if it's tree form or if it's shrub form. Don't think you can go wrong with it.
I agree. I like Miss Kim still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the foliage a little bit different. Sometimes it seems like it's a little fuller. Sometimes, you know, make sure when you plant Miss Kim, plenty of air movement around Miss Kim, because sometimes you can get a little powdery mildew on her.
It can.
But I still like her. You know, I think she's a beautiful specimen. And
we all can't be perfect like you, Tony. It's okay to have.
Where did you come up with that? Sometimes you'll see those issues. But I like her. I think Miss Kim's
a good
one.
She's a good bloomer. And I love the fact that the leaf is that different shape. Mm-hmm. So I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. And I still like the old-fashioned common lilac.
I do as
well.
You
just got to give her space.
I do as well.
She's going to get a little size to her.
You know, kind of like, you know, talking about a little bit of size with a various lilac, I like one called Sensation.
Yes.
I like the bloom on it. Very
darker purple,
yes,
right?
With white edges.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very interesting bloom. Very attractive.
Yeah. I don't think you can go wrong. I mean, even if you do the bloomerang, if you put it in a drier spot, I think you'll have better success with it. You know, the bloomerang had a lot of publicity behind it, but, you know, it's not my favorite. I would choose a couple other varieties over it, but, you know, she's out there and she's still being sold. Just got to know what you're getting.
I understand dark purple is very, very reliable. Now,
that's the newer one, though.
That's the newer one. So that's the one you typically see as well on a standard in a tree form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking of, do you like the Japanese lilac trees?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, and right now my favorite lilac tree is the ivory silk lilac tree.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that tree. A lot of people are starting to use it for street trees because of its size and because of the fact that it tends to grow. It doesn't have a giant root system, so it'll grow in a tighter area. But the cottony white flowers kind of all over the tree, and it's getting ready to bloom. So we've had all these other things blooming. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that it blooms later in the season, so it never gets hit by the frost.
That was my point. That's why I brought that up, because you were talking early in the program how things have just, you know, in a timely fashion, you know, we just started out with the red buds, you know, and how they start showing their color, then the magnolias, all those, they followed one another in sequence.
Yeah.
And the blooms have been spectacular.
It's just been spectacular.
And, you know, the lilac tree, the ivory silk, you know, another big key attribute about that tree, it tolerates poor soil conditions.
Yes, which makes it a good street tree.
You don't have to do anything special with it.
Mm-hmm.
So look for that one at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Yep, a lot of great lilacs out there. But, man, this show's wrapping up quick. We're getting close. Tony, what's going on over at Jackson's? We never talk about Jackson's. You're always so good about not doing that. But I want to find out, how are you guys doing? What's going on at Jackson's?
We're panting. We're trying to breathe and catch our breath. It's been crazy.
I know you've been getting load after load after load of annuals, and I was over visiting you the other day, and we were kind of walking through the greenhouses, and the color was great. You got a great selection going on. You know, if you haven't been over to Tony's place, definitely make it a place to stop by and see him. They got a great got great things going on over there.
It's crazy.
Tim does a great job. Tim does an awesome job over there. And Tina and all your staff.
Everybody does. I can't say enough about our staff and everybody throughout the whole workplace, you know, even the design team back in the floral end, they do a wonderful
job.
Their
back is killing them. Their backs are hurting
right now. Yeah, because I put it on them, right?
Because they're carrying
I couldn't be any more proud of them, so thanks for bringing that up. And, you know, you mentioned Tim Porter. For those of you that know Tim, Tim's been in the industry for a long time, and I don't want to gloat, but we were very fortunate that Tim came on board with us, and he was with Delhi Nursery for years. But he's been a wonderful addition to the staff.
And they need to, if you stop by, you need to say hi to your old man. Your dad, I love seeing your dad in the garden center. He was pulling hoses the other day. He was pulling flowers. You know, your dad was still working his tail off.
Life
and it
yours,
was, I love to see him. And my dad does the same thing. He works so hard.
He does.
Every
yes.
day. My mom, yes. they just, it, you know, some of the old garden centers, you get to go and you get to see the family and you get to see the generation after generation. And I know Todd Bate and his son's coming into the business soon. You know, I mean, that's the advantage of seeing some of these old time businesses. You're seeing the generations.
And, you know, you just mentioned something, you know, we all work alongside with our fathers. And I have to say I've been very fortunate, and it's something that I say it's kind of priceless because, you know, you don't often get to do that in life. But, right. You know, you take Mitch Messmer over there working alongside his dad,
yep.
Tommy. You and your father, you know, Ron Robin with his father who just recently passed, and Todd,
right.
you know, you're talking about generations, Earl Baton had passed, and then, you know, you have Todd, and then you have his son.
I'm coming
you
know? In soon.
So,
yep.
so that's the beauty of, you know, supporting local businesses, and those generations just keep continuing on the hard work and efforts that the others have done
in the past. You know, we appreciate our customers. That's why we're doing our customer appreciation today. And my good friend Mike Peterman from Queen City Propane, you know, he's coming out and he'll fill your, from 9 to 1 today only, fill your gas grill for $10. Or if you buy something from Bard Nurseries, you take the receipt out to those guys, they'll fill it for $7. So you can get all your flowers for mom. You can get your grill tank filled. And that way you're ready for Mother's Day to grill out and give mom her gift next week. And then even Mike's going to be grilling hot dogs at the garden center, and you get free hot dogs while you're shopping around if you want.
Can't beat it. All right. Well, have a great weekend. Enjoy what's headed our way. A little bit of moisture, but I think tomorrow's supposed to be decent. And have fun watching the Derby later on. And Bob and I will see you next Saturday.
Imagine a world where animals and humans coexist in harmony, where wild animals thrive, habitats are protected, and marginalized communities are empowered. At International Animal Rescue, this is our vision. Our holistic, community-led projects not only rescue animals, but also protect and replenish precious habitats, creating a better future for us all. But we can't do this without you. Show your support now and help keep the wild, wild. Visit internationalanimalrescue.org.
Picture this. It's Saturday morning and you're on your John Deere compact tractor. You're effortlessly breaking ground on your new landscaping project. Next, you're moving piles of rocks just by moving a lever. And now, you're enjoying the warmth of the sun as you clear brush across your pasture. We could keep trying to put you in the moment, but to really understand everything you can do with a John Deere compact tractor, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.